This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, live from the Royal Sports Studio on Pembina Highway at TSN 1290. Mr. Lube Manitoba Moose Game Day joined in progress tonight at 7. That's because Darren Bauman has CFL 60 at 6 because there was a Jets game last night. We'll delve into this 5-3 loss for the Winnipeg Jets against their Central Division rival, the Nashville Predators, down in Music City as they kicked off a four-game road trip. We'll be all over that. Monday Night Football last night was an exciting one. Atlanta on the road. Kaka! Pulls out a victory, 34-31. Another fake field goal call. We'll discuss that as well. The Grey Cup is set, and the Stamps come in as the favorites. We'll talk about that as it is officially Grey Cup, 105th Grey Cup week in Ottawa at our nation's capital. Of course, this is the radio home of your 105th Grey Cup on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jared Clinton from the Hockey News is going to join us. Brian Munns, Jets analyst, live from Los Angeles, where the team flew to last night. Milt Stegall as well on the panel and the offseason for the Bombers, and of course, the upcoming Grey Cup and the division finals. And Jason Cole will talk NFL with us, and we'll hear plenty of audio from the Winnipeg Jets. Matthew Perreault, Blake Wheeler, Tyler Myers and head coach Paul Maurice all breaking down the loss. And it's 20 games into the season, and we'll sort of evaluate that and where they sit and get your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line. As well, NHL news and notes, lots to get to. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you this fine Tuesday morning. Gentlemen, how are we?
Not bad. Reeling a little bit from the Jets game and jaw-dropping end of that Monday night or last night, being short on a 51-yarder right down the pipe. That's not supposed to happen in the NFL. But a good game. It's always fun after if you got a game, hockey game Monday night, to be able to bounce to catch whatever's remaining and all of it in full. And what was a game that looked like Atlanta was going to bury Seattle, and then Seattle comes back. But yeah, a little heartbroken or disappointed in the boys last night. But every once in a while, games like this happen. Move on, try and learn something, and go get the next victory.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Just chilling, boys. Just chilling. Tough fantasy loss with what went down in the Seattle Falcons game. So
I needed some overtime myself.
I needed a little bit of OT too, and I needed Russell Wilson to stop being a bit of an a-hole and you know, avoiding sacks every 3 seconds and throwing 50-yard bombs at Doug Baldwin for touchdowns. So
I need a little Matty Ice OT, and I need a little Jimmy Graham OT. But these things happen. It's not due to poor management, I'll tell you that.
It's amazing how, to the degree that Russell Wilson is running for his life week in, week out. Yeah. It's just you can't win with an old line like that, man.
Yeah, and I often thought, like somebody actually, when in between the intermission of the Jets and the Preds, I flipped over, and I think somebody tweeted, or maybe it was Gruden, I don't know, but somebody tweeted or talked about the fact that if Matt Ryan was on the Seahawks, he would be a homicide victim. Like, he can't move like if any quarterback who doesn't move like Russell Wilson plays behind that line. We'll talk about that game as well, and lots to get to after week 11 wraps up in the National Football League. But the Jets go into Nashville. I thought they had a very good first period for a road game, and then the second gets away from them. They take some penalties. Kyle Turris was flying. Ryan Johansson was all over. And the Predators get a 4-1 lead, and then they go into the third, and the Jets outscore the Predators and really take it to them throughout the entire third frame, but only manage to outscore the Predators 2-1. And they take a 5-3 loss 20 games into the season, and they remain in second in the Central Division, 1 point up on Nashville with a 12-5-3 record. Nashville's now 12-6-2, 27 points for the Jets, 26 for the Predators. And how much do you read into this? A lot of the guys after the game, a lot of the Jets, that is, saying, we're not going to dwell on it, we're going to move on, we know what we did in the second. Thought we liked our first and third, and they're moving on. You feel the same?
Yeah, you have to do that. And I think with the level the guys have been playing at lately, you can just kind of target this and as a sort of a one-off deal. Right? Lost to a good team, got in penalty trouble. You can't do that against a power play that operates at 38-39% at home. You just can't get into penalty trouble. That buries you in the second period. And then the horse crap, let's drink the Kool-Aid surge in the third period is fool's gold. The shooting chart here for Nashville is basically just flat line after flat line. You're up 4-1. Of course, you're going to dominate that period when 4-1. And they just about make it legitimately exciting, right, making it a one-goal game. But just refused to buy into the third period whatsoever. The Jets got manhandled in that second period. Some real basic fundamental errors they're making. And on top of it, they've got to be much more disciplined against a team so effective on their power play.
Yeah, it's pretty simple what happened out there. I mean, first things first, Nashville, man, are they ever fast. Like, they'll skate a lot of good teams into the ground this year. And when they turned it on into the second period there, it just seemed like the Jets didn't necessarily have the wheels to keep up with them. And the Preds are, I mean, they're pressure all the time. Mm-hmm. And the Jets were not very crisp and clean in exiting their own zone. They couldn't figure out an answer early on there on how to get some clean exits and move the other way and transition into offense. It was just a pass up to the winger, and the defenseman was quick on them with a nice gap and puck back into the neutral zone and just right back into the Jets' end. It was just, for a long stretch of time, it was get the puck out, puck comes right back in. And when you do that against a good team, they're going to make you pay, and that's what happened there. It really was just a poor second period that cost the Jets, because in that first, the script was flipped. They were all over Nashville early, and they were playing how you would expect them to. But it was just, was that ever an ugly second period? They were just so sloppy and really kind of surprisingly disappointed that the Mark Scheifele line was a big culprit in what went wrong in that middle frame, and maybe Scheifele in particular, missing a couple of defensive assignments on his own end, and then the big obvious one was the shorthanded turnover. That just, puck's just got to get out. He knows it. Everyone knows it.
Yeah, I thought the mistakes made last night, like even Jacob Trouba along the wall there on the turnover that resulted in the goal. Nashville has a very good forecheck, and you're right about the speed. I totally agree with that. So how does this sit with you after you've seen Nashville now for a game against the Jets and what sort of transpired? Take the win or the loss out of it, just how they match up in the Central. They have four more meetings this year.
Yeah, well, not going to put a whole pile of weight in it, no question. When you got Nick Bonino as your fourth line center, right? There's going to be a challenge from a depth perspective against really the vast majority, maybe 29 other teams, maybe 28 of them in the NHL. Their depth is pretty impressive, whether it's the blue line or up front. So, hey, crumple this one up, put it in the garbage. Understand you have to play at a higher level. You have to be quicker right across the board. You cannot take penalties. You have to be much more disciplined. And play hard, get ready, and hope for a new result on December 19th, the next time you play them.
Yeah, I said yesterday that I think the Preds are probably the cream of the Central. You know, like the biggest threat to the Jets if they potentially get into the playoffs. And I think that was kind of borne out last night. You know, even with the Blues' hot start to the season, you look at the way the Preds play, and they're going to get Ryan Ellis back too. They're a really good hockey team, and I think right now they're probably a step above the Winnipeg Jets. But having said that, it's not like the Jets were so heavily outclassed for the first 40 or 50 minutes or anything like that. Like the Jets had the game right where they wanted it after 20. They were out shooting Nashville. They were basically out everything them. But
there was a slight edge in the first period. It wasn't.
Yeah, but right. It was where that's what you wanted if you were the Jets. You outshot them in the first period, and you were playing good. There was no signs of impending doom, at least.
Yeah.
Going into the middle frame, and maybe the most concerning thing out of everything that happened last night was that the House of Cards penalty kill. You can't kill penalties like that. I know they've been on a good run, but you can't. It's just you're asking a damn lot out of your goalie and a lot of your penalty killing forwards to try and block a lot of shots.
Connor Hellebuck takes the loss, his second in regulation this year, 24 saves on 29 shots, comes out of it with an 8.28. Your thoughts on his performance last night?
I thought he was okay. Oh, that one, the tourist power play, that score goes through him, but boy, that's a lot of east-west to cover, and you're going to naturally open up when you're covering that much ice to get across from him. So I don't think that he was a problem last night. Maybe it wasn't as sharp as ultimately he would have liked to have been. He got really hooped, right, on the Tyler Myers and whoever it was back with him, Ehlers, like that whole gong show. He was put in a real tough situation on a couple of occasions with the Shifley turnover as well. It just there was some ugly crap that unfolded in front of him. But I don't think he played poorly. This is another one, like for as the team could just sort of brush this off its shoulders. I think a similar situation here for Connor Hellebuck, where this is a one-off, saw some crap, move on, and play at a higher level going forward.
I thought it was kind of like some of Steve Mason's early games in the year, where I didn't think he played bad, but it's just kind of sometimes what happens out there in front of you. You're the victim of that, and your numbers take a bit of a hit. You look at the goals, and yeah, I don't know if there's a necessarily there might have been one or two where you're like, oh, maybe he could have got a save there, but I didn't think he was poor on the night. Just didn't get a whole lot of help in the second period.
This is the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Wessler, Brendan Rewicki, we're breaking down the Jets' 5-3 loss to Nashville. What did you guys think of Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine and Brian Little? I know he broke that line up. The line blender came out for Paul Maurice last night, but what did you think of the Ehlers and the Laine performance? 17:35 for Laine, 59 seconds on the power play. Ehlers 15:13, 1:43 on the power play.
Well, it's never looked like that line has taken from a chemistry standpoint, right? Like there's just kind of something missing there. So they look to me like they have in the past, where it's sort of choppy and individualistic, missing the like synergy is missing from that line, where the three individuals the three individuals coming together add collectively to become more than the sort of the sum of their parts sort of thing. It's not there. There is a lack of chemistry on that line. I just don't know what you do outside of switching the centers from the top two lines, right, which we've discussed at length here. So I don't know how patient Paul Maurice is going to be with it, but maybe knocking on the door of finally something's going to happen with it.
Yeah, it's just not working. Like, I don't know how many more games you have to go through here to figure out that if it was decent for you last year, it's not there this year. And you will have to make a change at some point. You know, is that putting Ehlers and Laine between Adam Lowry? I don't think that's the move. I don't think Adam Lowry's game fits either of those guys. And you saw Laine move with Lowry there in the third period. But it's just not there. And, you know, you're not getting enough from Brian Little either. You just don't notice him a whole lot. Like, I can't really remember a standout game he's had this season. And even if you want to break it down further than that, is there a period he's had where you're like, oh, Brian Little's really flying out there today. He's really creating a whole lot. Like, it's just been – I kind of wondered about this a week or so ago, but, like, is there an injury there or something? Like, he's just not the same guy we had seen over the past couple of seasons.
I liked your comment about the individuality. It seems like there's a lot of individual play there, like trying to make something happen.
I think that's inevitable when there's a lack of chemistry, right?
Yeah, I guess. And highly skilled players, like they always want to sort of be the difference. But I thought that – I know Poulin on the TSN 3 broadcast kept mentioning that he was waiting – he expected that line to break out or sort of get him out of this hole that they were in when it was 3-1 and 4-1, and I didn't see it happening, and it's curious. We'll talk more about this. We'll hear from the Jets. We'll do it at the bottom of the hour. We'll get into some comments from the coach and focus on the 20 games into the season and where you feel this team is at and where the gentlemen feel this team is at as well. Up next, we're going to talk about the Monday Night Football game last night, though Week 11 wrapped up, and another fake field goal call that did not work out. We'll get into the brains of some of these coaches. Up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11. On TSN 1290.
They're back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. It's 21 minutes past the opening hour. Lots to get to today, including the Grey Cup, Week 11 in the National Football League, Week 12, and of course, plenty in the Jets. 5-3 loss to the Nashville Predators, 20 games in. Where do you think they're at? How do you think this sets up for the next 20 and the rest of the season? We'll do that on the Boss Pizza fan line. But, gentlemen, last night Atlanta went into Seattle. This should have been one. I think it was my bonus six-pack pick. I had Atlanta winning, and they pulled it out. Seattle was favored by 3.5. But Atlanta pulls it out 34-31. End of the first half, The Seahawks, the Atlanta Falcons take a timeout. And the Seahawks come out to kick a field goal. They fake it with a run. It doesn't work. They get no points. They end up losing by three on a missed 51-yarder at the end of regulation. Your thoughts on Pete Carroll and his fake field goal with 2 seconds to go and a half?
Oh, there are 7 seconds. What's your problem with it?
Well, I didn't get any points. It didn't work. And even if they get a first down, is there enough time for you to do anything with
it? Yeah, there's not. So they were expecting to go to the end zone. The only thing I would say to that is if you get by the line, like this, that's a touchdown or nothing sort of a play. No one's going to tackle the situation there, right? There's no returner standing back there. And so when you're talking about Luke Wilson, if Luke Wilson gets through the line of scrimmage, then he's getting a touchdown. So I'm seeing the harsh criticism for it and all the rest of it. But this such is the nature of calling fakes, isn't it? I mean, it either works or doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, for the most part, people think that it's a stupid or a bad call. But there's all kinds of risk involved. But it looked to me like their long snapper in the A gap is where their long snapper gives up that A gap. He looks like he's supposed to have it covered, and that's where the Falcon was able to come through and make a play on it. But I don't, there is the time with only 7 seconds makes it a little bit dicey, because if you go pick up the first down, and unless you get into the end zone, the play's going to die, right? That was stopped behind the line of scrimmage and only 2 seconds were remaining. So, it's a boom or bust sort of a play. I don't have a problem with failed attempts at fakes, and there's enough time certainly to recover down by seven with not converting that fake.
Yeah, I mean, you would have liked to have maybe had a timeout, and so in case you pick up the first down and you're stopped, then yeah, at least you can kind of regroup after that. Troy's right. Like, it's if he makes the fake, what is everyone saying? Pete Carroll's a genius. Caught the Falcons napping. Like, what a coaching move! Like that. I don't have a huge. I wouldn't have done it there, but I don't have a huge problem with plays like that. And really, what it comes down to is if his players execute there, and the big fella up the middle, who really shouldn't, like, that shouldn't be the guy that makes the tackle. Like, if that play fails, it should be somebody on the outside that makes the tackle, not the 300 plus big guy in the middle.
A gap, yeah.
Yeah. So if they execute better, the play was there. Like, it was. It was a touchdown waiting to happen. I wouldn't have done it, but I'm always down when a team's aggressive like that. If you work on something in practice and you see the formation working up for you guys and you think you can take advantage of it, then that's why you practice those plays.
So Atlanta improves to 6-4 in an NFC South, where Carolina is 7-3, New Orleans is 8-2. Seattle drops to 6-4. They're a game back of the LA Rams in the standings. The missed 51-yard field goal at the end to tie it. What's your thoughts on that?
It's shocking. Right? Blair Walsh got a pretty big leg, I think. And it looked to me like the rotation was pretty good. And it's not like, it was a cool night, but nothing too crazy. And that's just a kick you expect to be made in the NFL. Certainly not short, right? Like anything but short. Wide, sure. But for a kick in the NFL, 51 yards to be short, that was absolutely shocking.
Yeah, and in Seattle, a place where the ball travels really well, too. The Seahawks need to get rid of Blair Walsh ASAP. Like, I'm sorry. Like, how many games has he cost them this year? I know he missed there was a game, I think it was against Washington, where he missed three field goals.
Washington, he missed three field goals, and he went on the road last week. Where were they? And he actually helped them win, and they said on the broadcast that probably helped save his job with his performance last week. Well, so he missed three, went on the road, hit like three or four, and then this game.
Yeah, now that's out the window. And you wonder, too, if the fake field goal, maybe like Blair Walsh's struggles, if they played a part in that as well, where you're not super comfortable with him kicking from long range, so maybe you feel like, hey, let's push the envelope a little bit here with the fakes. But he's damaged goods ever since that missed kick for Minnesota against Seattle, that chippy that he missed. The guy's done. Like, he can't get it done anymore. And to miss a, like, that, it just can't happen in the NFL. I don't think it could happen in the CFL either.
He hit it 50 yards. He needed 51.
Like, to guys these days,
Medlock had the same sort of attempt earlier this year, right?
Where, yeah.
He was
NBC.
Short on a very similar
guys. Guys
pick
these days, 50 yarders, distance wise, they make that in their sleep. Like that should you just can't be short on a kick like that.
Yeah, it was like he hit a dead center. It literally was 50 yards. Like, it just came down 1 foot shy of the uprights. and Seattle loses. Do you buy into Seattle? Or are they a playoff team?
The very first you knew coming into the season, their O-line was a mess. And you watch any Seattle Seahawks football, Russell Wilson is perpetually running for his life. Hell no, I do not buy the Seattle Seahawks. Their defense now decimated. Sherman lost for the season. A bunch of other nagging injuries. They're old in the secondary, so they're getting banged up naturally as well. And that O-line is absolutely god-awful.
Yeah, I mean, you have the Falcons and Seahawks tied for the final wild card spot after last night. I don't know how you could pick Seattle over Atlanta. And Atlanta started to kind of surge a little bit here. I expect the Falcons to kind of cruise past Seattle for that last wild card spot.
I do too. Atlanta just coming around now with home wins against Dallas and then a victory on the road against Seattle. I have them ahead of Seattle as well. We'll talk more NFL when Jason Cole joins us at 8:30 from the Bleacher Report. But up next, we'll get into some of the audio from postgame from the Winnipeg Jets and get the thoughts after 20 games. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Together with our friends from Scotiabank, Winnipeg Police Service, and Winnipeg Fire and Paramedics, we are on a mission to make Christmas happen for everyone, regardless of their financial situation. Join us Friday, December the 1st, between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m., and Saturday, December the 2nd, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We'll be broadcasting live from Center Court of CF Polo Park, 1485 Portage Avenue, collecting new unwrapped toys and cash donations in support of the Salvation Army. Toy and cash donations are also being accepted now until Christmas Eve at all Winnipeg Scotiabank locations, all Winnipeg Fire and Police stations, and at TSN 1290 Studios, 1445 Pemina Highway, Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. Anchor Products NHL Power Hour coming up in the next hour. And we're going to delve into some CFL in our next segment as well. Jason Moss says he won't ever regret the last field goal.
Horse crap.
I won't ever regret it.
That night after the game in the coach's changing room, he's slumped over, leaning on the sink, looking deep into the mirror. I guarantee you that was a full, regretful, deep-in-the-eyes kind of look.
Never.
If you're a player, like if that happened when you played, Troy, do the players in the locker room, A, want to physically harm him, and B, does that actually strain the relationship between player and coach? When he's that, arrogant's the right word.
Well,
but
I've never been a part of a team where a coach has made a decision like that. You know, like we, although like there are times in, there was a playoff game in Hamilton where we needed a field goal to win, I believe, and we were in a situation with a minute 20 where Coach Ritchie decided to punt the ball. And we were pretty deep in our zone into a win and stuff like that. So it seemed like it was a bit of a risky move to make, but we ended up cranking the punt and causing a problem for, they lost 15 yards on the return of zone. We ended up getting the ball back and were able to kick a field goal. So it can be, you know, there can be a little bit dicey back and forth and debate within the locker room in situations like that. But that was the most flagrant where you looked at, and it's real hard to make sense of what Jason Moss was thinking there. So I would think for sure guys in the locker room, you know, would be questioning that. But when you have respect for your coach, it's like he's the field general. And I don't know how long or how strong that would be, because I think his situation, like Jason Moss is in that locker room, he has pretty good standing in there, you know.
Would you rather that he said, I mean, that's a great question, Brad, and the follow-up to me is
it's
like...
It's a mediocre question.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great question. What would you think...
It's an even worse answer.
Yeah, I didn't like the answer. What would you... Like, it's one thing to sit there and go, okay, you know, he's our coach, I like him, I believe in him, I trust him, whatever about the call. But then when you hear this, no, I don't regret it, and you feel it's the wrong call, do you sit here going,
Coach. You know he's going to die on that hill, right? Coach. Anyone that's been around the game at all, and maybe it's football coaches more so than any other coach I've ever been around, like those football coaches more so than others seem to put the flag on the hill, and that's where they're going to die. And to come out and admit that they made a mistake in such a critical juncture of a game, I don't know that I've ever heard a coach admit that before even.
Well, Coach Paul Maurice spoke last night after the 5-3 loss in Nashville. Here are his thoughts and evaluations of the game in Music City.
Our gaps weren't very good. We came off it a little bit. They got to flipping the puck into the middle, and we were given more ice than we needed to. But that's still, I mean, the shots, I think, are going to be close to 11-7, 11-8, 5-on-5. We were just in the penalty box, and they were pounding them from there. But you know, we chased a face-off loss that we shouldn't chase, and we have full control on the second one. That's got to get down.
That Predators power play is very impressive.
38% at home, Dennis Bayak informed us, right? And looked... The combo, and that's a combo meal deal right there, boys. That's a very effective home power play by the Preds. And what I and Wicks and a lot of other people think is a remarkably suspect passive penalty kill, just sitting back, letting Preds move, look for a weakness and slide it across. If you got Turris all alone, great, who can blast it home, or if you're just going to blast it from the point and have all day to set up perimeter-type things to cause trouble in front of Connor Hellebuyck, you'll take advantage of. But that the second period was the two power play goals that the Preds got, right? Like that's what embodied that all the trouble there in that second period to me.
Yeah, like even if you give up the Johansson one to start on kind of a bungled play by just about everyone on the ice. I mean, you're 2-1 going into the third if you're able to kind of withstand a bit of that rally there. But the PK last night, just it didn't do anything it was supposed to. Like, at least in the past, the PK didn't give up a whole lot of crossing passes. And you can kind of, if you're Paul Maurice, I guess you can justify, well, you know, at least our goalie's able to kind of see everything. He's not moving much. Mm-hmm. We trust him to make those saves, but I mean, when you allow them to go back one way and then back across the other way to Turris for a one timer, I mean that's a fatal flaw right there.
And I think Wicks, like, if you're gonna, you can rotate your power play, and if, no matter how passive and tight that the Jets box is on that penalty kill, you'll find those cross ice passes. If all the Preds are rotating on the outside, you're going to cause that little passive box all kinds of problem with that, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And then even on the Ekholm goal, like, you're if that's the one you're going to give up, that's an issue too, to let a guy with a bomb of a shot basically walk in and tee one up with the screen in front. They just, you wonder when the tipping point's going to be. And even if there is one, like, will there be one, right? Like, at some point, when every other team in the NHL is going high aggressiveness, and that's what all the successful ones do, and the Jets are doing a complete 180 there, you get the feeling there's going to be more nights like this in the future than there are ones we'd seen in the past couple of games.
The other thing I noticed last night is the Predators scouted the Jets pretty well, because when they were on the power play, or just even when they're trying to get some goals in the third, they've taken away that little... Or did their best to take away that little slot pass into Scheifele or Laine, especially on the power play when they're down the middle there, which I just thought was great scouting. I know there was a couple times Wheeler kept trying to feed that puck in there, and they just were in the lane, and I thought, that's not going to work tonight. Like, you got to come up with something else. So overall, after 20 games into the season, the Winnipeg Jets, as I mentioned, are 12-5-3, 27 points. Second in the Central Division, they have a goal differential of plus 11 now after 20 games. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on his thoughts at the 20-game mark of this season.
You know what? We've been pretty darn consistent after our first two that we started the season. We've had a couple that you don't like. Every team's got that. We've been pretty resilient in games. But I'd say we've been pretty consistent.
So what are your thoughts on the first 20 games of the season where the Jets sit second in the Central as we approach this Thursday's American Thanksgiving mark?
I say this in a literal sense. No one had the Jets 12-5-1. Nobody. So, hey, standing ovation, A for sure, across the, as a team in a general sense, the grade for sure is an A. Second in the Central, they're at a real good place. And now we all now we just kind of ride this out, right? This is a different thing. Normally after 20 games, there's a little bit of a chase mode, and that's a certain mentality Jets fans are going to be used to. I get a kick out of, we hear it every single hour between 9 to 10 when folks call in, the people who are, you know, the anxiousness, the worry, concern that are the boys going to come back and fade and what's going to go wrong, like the whole half glass full or the glass half full sort of thing, right, where it's... And some people claim that's sort of a Winnipeg thing where you worry about potential negatives instead of celebrating what are apparent positives. So I say drink this in, enjoy it here, ladies and gentlemen. The Jets are the real deal within the Central. There's some strong teams, arguably St. Louis and Nashville. Winnipeg's right there with them. There's other teams with problems. You're looking at Chicago's got problems. Colorado is, you know, limited. Dallas is still a sort of a work in progress. And Minnie's on the rebound trying to come back as well. But just enjoy it. The Jets are real. There's no doubt about that to me.
The most important thing is that they've banked the points. Have they played their best hockey? No, I honestly don't think it's close to their best hockey right now. But they banked those points. Like, they're there. They don't have to worry about that anymore. And you hope that they get a little bit better in the next 20 games or so, because there's still some unsustainability in what they had done in some of their numbers before. But if you can pick up what a 12-5 and whatever record to kick off the season, and you're not playing your best hockey, that's some solid work there. And you've done that as well without big number 29 really wreaking havoc just yet. Like there's a bit of good and a bit of bad in each. But all in all, just take the record and run with it at this point. And really, the biggest difference from this team last year to this year, it all starts, everybody knows it, it starts in net, right? Like, that's the main reason this team is where they're at right now.
Here's Matthew Perreault post-game last night. We'll get his thoughts on the Jets' season so far after 20 games.
Hellebuck playing great. You know, that solves a lot of problems sometimes when the goalie makes the key saves at key times. I think he's done that for us all year. So, Dad and the way we battle, we play hard. You know, we win tight games that we take to, you know, overtime, a lot of games to overtime, which is good points that maybe last year we weren't able to take games to overtime. We'd lose late in the third. Now we're taking them to overtime and find a way to win. So, it's good.
Interesting, because it's just over a year from the Heritage Classic.
I was just going
to
say that.
When Matthew Perreault sat down and was asked about the loss to Edmonton and where they are at this point of the season, he said, well, sometimes you need a save. Like, we need better goaltending. And this year, full credit to the goaltending, and that's what he credits to where their season's at right now.
No question about it. Like what you guys are saying there, the single largest identifying factor with the level of success for the Jets is going to be the 930-ish save percentage of Connor Hellebuck, and the even the play of Steve Mason, right? Take those first two games, throw him in the garbage, or even the first three games that he was in there where there's number struggled. Since then, he's been upwards of 930 as well. So that whole, and you just feel good now when, I do anyway, and I would assume most do, when Helly is given a night off and you see Steve Mason in that, there's a certain level of confidence and just comfort with having a veteran guy in there for the boys when Hellebuck's sitting down.
And even if there is a bit of a swoon from Hellebuck, like last year, you'd go to Hutchinson and things would get worse. Like, right? Like, it's not like you'd go in there and you'd feel good about it. This year, like, if Hellebuck, say, doesn't play as he has over the next couple of games, and never mind the fans, but think how the team feels, right? If your goalie's been struggling a bit, and oh yeah, we got close to a 30-year-old veteran who's carried teams to the playoffs before, we're throwing that guy in the net for a couple of games. Like, that's some people that didn't like that signing and didn't like it in the offseason or early on, there's no doubt that's, you've mentioned a number of times, JT, it's just going to be huge. Whenever Mason's called upon, and he's going to have to be, not for a game or two, but probably going to be for, you know, four or five in a row where the Jets are going to need him to kind of help out Hellebuck and maybe give him a bit of a breather.
What do you like about Paul Maurice's stance with the goaltenders? Because I thought last week for sure Steve Mason was going to get a game. And then we all know that Paul Maurice, especially in Carolina, doesn't mind riding a goaltender. He will ride the hot goaltender. He understands clearly when he does that, in my point of view, is they need points. I don't care. We need points. We'll manage the whole balancing act and everything else. And he seems to be doing that with Connor Hellebuck right now. His whole philosophy, as he used to have, is I'm going to ride the hot hand.
And which coach doesn't ride the hot hand? Right, like Connor Hellebuck, at this point in time, as we've watched the season unfold, has seemed to establish himself. When you're tied for, or you're in fourth spot in save percentage going into the game last night, you've probably taken the starting job. And with the five remaining games left in the month this year, I would suspect the only start that Steve Mason's going to get is going to be against the Ducks or the Sharks in that back-to-back situation, assuming that Connor Hellebuyck continues to play well. I assume Connor Hellebuyck to get a start, the start against the Kings, and then for Mason to get one of those back-to-backs.
Some coaches will try to manage it. Some coaches will say, you're really hot right now, and I'm riding you, so I want to make sure you're rested and at your optimal. So here I'm giving you, like, some coaches won't do this. Some coaches will
well, I don't think he's
maybe overcoach, you know? Or
I don't think he's riding him into the ground or nothing like that. He's just, like, he's not riding him too hard, I don't think. He's as a starting goaltender, going to get your X number of games, and your backup will play as it suits in the schedule. Or if there's never, if you go a long stretch with no back-to-backs, you'll find somewhere to fit him in, like one every 10 games sort of thing. But what we're witnessing right now, to me, is just your typical starting goaltender, backup goaltender breakdown.
Yeah, and there hasn't been like an overload of road games. Like the travel schedule hasn't been overly difficult so far. So, yeah, I don't really have much of a problem with how the goalie rotation's gone so far. And I'll say this as the big caveat: as long as Mason gets one of the two Friday Saturday games, whichever one that is, like I'm kind of okay with how anything goes, as long as you just don't throw that goalie into the back to back situation.
20 games in, we'll get your thoughts on where you think the Jets are at. And as Troy said, I hear the same thing. A lot of Jets are apprehensive of buying in. Are you buying in? Do you think this is a solidified team that is on their way to a playoffs this year after 20 games? We'll get your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line. But when we come back to the big show from the Royal Sports Studio, we'll delve into this Grey Cup. We'll talk more about Jason Moss and also the Stamps are the early favorites. We'll let you know by how much and get the gentleman's impression on if they are the favorites in their mind. This is the big show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the big show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Next hour is underway in 7 minutes, and it's the Anchor Product NHL Power Hour. Lots more in the Jets' loss to the Nashville Predators. Their four-game road trip continues Wednesday night in LA. They have an off day today. We'll hear some more audio. Brian Munns is going to join us in that hour as well, and Jared Clinton from the Hockey News. The 105th Grey Cup will be heard this Sunday right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Hustler and Rick Ralph are taking the afternoon ride on the road. Darren Bombing will be in tonight at 6 with CFL 60 because of the Jets game last night. And then he'll be on his way to Ottawa as well to take in the 105th Grey Cup. Lots of extensive coverage from the Classic here on TSN 1290. Just a little bit more on this Jason Moss stuff, saying that he will never regret that call. And I don't think it's the call he'll never regret. I don't think he regrets anything. He's that kind of coach that, like, I'm not looking back and I'm not. But he did say after the game as well, it was a faith decision to kick the late field goal.
Oh, it's well, you can have faith you're going to pull an eight for a gut shot straight draw in a poker game, too. It's stupid. There's probability involved, and you're out there playing chess or checkers, man. And you can't make decisions based on faith or gut feel and that sort of thing. You have to weigh everything to the best of your ability, and it's real good to have someone on your coaching staff to bounce ideas instead of standing there like a dictator and just going with your gut. So I don't believe hey, you're going to project that you don't regret anything, and you can throw things in the garbage like athletes do, and they say great athletes, many of them have fantastic or you know, poor memory. That's the one of the best assets you can have, is you forget about mistakes and you move forward. Well, you're a fool as a head coach if you just crumple up the mistake, throw it in the garbage, and don't learn from it. There's something to be learned here for Jason Moss, and I refuse to believe what he's projecting to the public is what he feels behind closed doors.
Yeah, a level of humility wouldn't hurt him at all. But I would also say, too, like, again, coaches do this all the time when they outthink themselves. Lose with your best player. Like, let Mike Riley, like, if you're going to lose, let Mike Riley be
and
the one that
is,
doesn't get it done.
The thing is, you don't even lose in that situation. You're simply putting your defense out in the field with Calgary pinned super deep in their own zone and trying to get the ball back again. So it makes no sense.
So as a player, do you want your coach to admit that?
I don't think
he might be in a closed door room and go, look, guys, if I had to do it again, we do it differently. It was a great season, blah, blah, blah. Or do you... Or do
I don't think the guys
if he
care.
Comes in and says, we'll do it again that way, if it happens, you know, good season, blah, 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 does that bother you?
Well, it would bother Mike Riley for him to come in and say, hey, I would, in that same situation, I'd make the exact same call. I don't know that he says that. And I think when he's in a room with Mike Riley at their exit meeting, I don't think that he projects that he doesn't regret anything. I think that they're having a real strong conversation about that. And that you can admit mistakes at that point in time with your players that you're kind of tight and close with. But I ultimately, I don't think the players, he's not thrown anybody under the bus. He's taken all of the bullets and the arrows that are coming in here and taken full responsibility for it. So I don't think the players really care about what the public thinks or anything along those lines, right? Like those sort of things are sacred within the room, and they know the real deal.
So they come in, the Stamps do, as 7-point favorites. We're out of time right now, but we will talk about that, the spread, and if that is a legitimate spread going into the 105th Grey Cup between the Toronto Argonauts and the Calgary Stampeders as the Stamps look for redemption from last year's loss to the Ottawa Red Blacks. But up next, it's the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour, and Jared Clinton from the Hockey News kicks it off with us on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio, Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. Your NHL news and notes are still to come. Brian Munns will join us live from Los Angeles. It's an off day for the Jets, but he'll delve into that 5-3 loss to the Predators and talk about the first 20 games as well. We'll hear more from some of the players last night as well and continue the hockey talk today, right now, as we get into things around the league. And we're trying to get a hold of Jared Clinton from the Hockey News to get his thoughts.
Mitch Peacock.
Oh, Mitch Peacock is today. Oh, that explains it. Yeah, Mitch Peacock.
Right? Maybe I wrote Jared Clinton, did I?
Yeah.
My apologies.
That's okay. We're going to talk about NHL stuff with the NHL news and notes as well and throughout this hour, but we're going to talk some Manitoba Moose with Mr. Mitch Peacock as well.
Omaha!
Omaha!
That's the old text at 4:30 in the morning screw up, huh?
Making an adjustment. Well, I saw you said Dennis Payak, and I'm like, well, that was yesterday, but I knew it was Brian Munns today.
Two mistakes. So, yeah. Beauty.
Omaha!
That's a beauty.
Nebraska.
Morning,
yeah. Nebraska. Omaha! but I knew it was Munns today, so I was fine with that. But yeah. Jared Clinton will join us later in the week as well. But we do bring in the voice of the Manitoba Moose right here on TSN 1290 and moosehockey.com on a Moose Hockey game day. Mr. Lou, Manitoba Moose game day. Mr. Peacock, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing excellent, thank you. Pretty big week last week with 3 straight wins and 6 points for the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, huge for the team, especially coming off of a lengthy road trip. You know, sometimes when you do that, the team struggles a little bit to find itself, maybe letting their guard down some. But the Moose found a way to grind through a tough one the first game back from the road trip, 3-2 against Chicago, and then looked very energetic and excited to play and more focused, I guess, coming up on the Friday night game against Chicago. Won that one 6-4, and then did a nice job playing its best game of the homestand against Laval on Sunday afternoon, winning it 5-2. So 3-for-3 so far, chance to match a season high with a 4th straight win tonight, and winners of 7 of their last 8, sitting first in the Central.
This is a lot of fun for Jets and Moose fans, and people are talking about the fact that the Jets being, I think their record, they're 4th or something like that going into the game last night. They're pretty high on an assortment of rankings and all the rest of it, and then seeing the Moose alongside, sort of riding shotgun in that success atop the Central in the A, it's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, quite a week last week when you think about it, Troy, with those 6 games at Bell MTS Place and the National Hockey League team winning all 3 of theirs and the American Hockey League team winning all 3 of theirs. It's a fun time to be a fan of those teams and a testament to the organization and where things have come to. But early in the season for both teams, and lots of games to go. So we'll see, but yeah, right now lots of smiles around the rink and in town.
A big week for Mason Appleton. He joined Rick Ralph yesterday in the Gondola Pizza warm-up on TSN 1290, but he was named AHL Player of the Week. 3 goals, 3 assists in the 3 victories, but 2 game-winners as well. Not only putting up points, Mitch, but important ones for the team.
Yeah, what an interesting player he is, guys. You know, first 4 games of the season, getting his feet wet, didn't get a chance to get onto the score sheet, but looked like he was a good player. Seems to understand the two-way game and work hard. And you know, you don't have too many expectations for a first-year pro who only played 2 years in college. And then he found himself on a line with Michael Scarbosa and Buddy Robinson, and they really clicked and started producing. And now he's, you know, shown that he can play in special team situations, both power play and penalty kill. He's developed a comfort playing with other players as well. And you have a week like he had this last week. Obviously, he's not a guy who's going to score 6 points every 3 games, but he's a guy who has the ability to finish things off and also make plays. And as I said, work in special team scenarios. So he's a really bright guy. He's a willing learner. He's a willing worker, and he's got some good tools. So nice to see what's happening for him early on here. And again, we'll watch his development as the season goes forward, but a really pleasant surprise to me anyway. I don't think there were super high expectations for him coming in, as I said, just off of 2 years in college.
Maybe somewhat similar to the sort of the heater that Appleton's on. You look at Cameron Schilling as a defenseman sitting there with 14 points after 18 games. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, very impressive stuff. He's fifth in the league in defenseman scoring, and a guy who has you know, a really nicely rounded game. This is a 200-foot or two-way defenseman, a guy who is able to get some points working on the power play, but also a guy who can set things up 5-on-5. A lot of what's happening for Cameron Schilling is, I think, a really good feel for the game, just a real good read on how things are in the game. He knows when to go. He knows when to make passes. He understands when there's an opening at the offensive end, and he's able to make the most of it. And I think on top of that, a super addition to the team when it comes to leadership and maturity. He's the oldest player in the group and a guy who really carries himself well around the team, not only on the ice but off the ice. Setting a tone, and I think you know, he's enjoying this run here of offense to go along with it. But I think it's worth mentioning that you know, right now the team has 7 players on multi-game point streaks, and 4 of those players are defensemen. And what the team has this year is a real group of defensemen who are, I think, astute in reading the play. Sammy Niku is a very offensive-minded defenseman, but the others that have those streaks going, I think, are players who are bright and understand opportunity, and the coaches have really encouraged them to read the play and judge when they can be that second wave of attack. And when you've got players that are getting good at those reads and good at those decisions, you end up putting more pressure on at the attacking end. You maintain possession longer, you get more pucks to the net, and consequently players who have some offensive ability but good heads on their shoulders are able to get in on the act and make things tough for the other team.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mitch. And tell us about Sammy Niku. I know he got a goal the other day. Just how he's been, because I know a lot of people had high expectations for him coming into Jets camp. He's been sent down to the Manitoba Moose. He does have a future with the Jets organization, I believe. How has he been overall?
I think very good overall, but you know, you do have to remember that it is a big adjustment for any player coming to North America for the first time. And Sammy's still a young man, although he has you know, over 100 games of experience in the top league in Finland. Still a guy that's, you know, developing as a professional overall, but then additionally developing here in North America. So different size of ice surface, a different pace of play. One of the things that I've heard in talking with the coaches about Sammy is that when you play in Europe and you have a little bit of a bigger ice surface and you have good skating ability, as Sammy does, sometimes what happens when you come here is you think you have more time to go back and get the puck and more time to start the play going forward on the attack. And consequently, you take that time, and it's not there. So then you end up in a jam and under pressure, and it can lead to time in your end or turnovers. And so what they've tried to do with Sammy is, through video and through his own observations of what's happening on the ice, is really encourage him to use his speed to get back and get the puck quickly, get his head turned up ice, and get things moving forward as quickly as possible. When he does that, and he can capitalize on a good mind for the game, but also that good skating ability and puck-moving ability. If he doesn't get back there quickly and do that, then he brings the pressure on and makes things harder for himself. And I think, you know, it's interesting. That's probably something that happens to young defensemen and pro in general. But in particular with players coming over to a different size playing surface, because I know that that happened with Josh Morrissey as well. Those are such skilled players and smart players. They get used to a rhythm at a different level, and they just bring that rhythm over, and then they have to be sort of shown or come to a realization that that pacing is just not there when you take the step up.
Mitch, I think it's fair to say that Nick Petan was given a reasonable chance to be successful with the Winnipeg Jets in the opportunities that he was afforded, and a lot of people thought, especially this year coming back down to the Moose, that he'd be really able to establish himself and make some serious noise in the A. Your thoughts on the state of Nick Petan and his game right now?
Yeah, I think there's a certain level of frustration right now for Nick because he knows that he has great talent. He's a determined guy. He's not a guy who's floating around expecting things to come to him. He is mature. He's responsible, devoted to his craft. But I think he expects it too. And I wonder sometimes if that isn't weighing on him just a little bit, that he feels he should be doing more. He's got a very respectable 7 points in 11 games. He's got a very good plus minus. He stayed out of the box. So it's not like he's taking silly penalties or, you know, playing with some sort of petulance in his game. He's come down. He's worked. He cares. He's trying. But I think you're right. There's probably something on his shoulders right now that he's got in his mind that he should be, you know, a devastating player at this level. And I think that's just part of understanding that the American Hockey League is a very good league and understanding his game a little bit better. He's played in some different situations. He played with Patrice Cormier and Jack Roslovic. They did very well as a line, and that's when he was extremely productive during his time down here. And then I think that in other situations, he's had to adapt to line mates. He plays a unique style of game that doesn't always work with everybody else. And I think he's also learning how to translate that game still to this level, because in a way that some players feel strapped by a lack of natural ability to handle the puck, I think Nick might be burdened a little bit by a natural ability to handle the puck. What I mean by that is you watch him in a practice or you see him in certain power play situations, and the guy's a wizard. He can do things that you can't believe. But then you get into game situations or you look for measures of productivity, and you don't necessarily see it. So I think there's a translation that's still going on for Nick, both in terms of that game to the pro level and that game specifically to the AHL. And I might, this is probably harsh, Troy, but maybe on a soccer analogy, you might get it, where a guy is a tremendous freestyler, but doesn't necessarily make a huge difference in a game, mm-hmm. in soccer.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of that when it comes to Nick Petan. Got a tremendous bag of tricks that'll make you dizzy. He's just trying to figure out exactly how those bag of tricks translate, but it's not for lack of effort.
I never had that problem in soccer.
Me either. Kick it, get it out of here.
Yeah, just be a part of the program, Toth, and you might get some playing time. With the team 11-5-1-1, Mitch, before we let you go, I just want to get your thoughts on Patrice Cormier. And he's been around for a while, and he's been around through some of those lean years. And I know that, you know, he wants to contribute. He's a very good team guy. He's an excellent captain. But for guys to go through, you know, what he's been through with an organization, he must be enjoying this 11-5-1-1 run.
Well, I guess I'd like to tell you that he is, but you know Patrice. And, you know, one of the things that he's been saying fairly often in recent days was, it's early. Don't get too excited. The long season, you know. It was funny because on social media recently, our staff posted something that showed that the Moose were in first place in the Central Division, first time they had climbed to the top of the division this season. And we were on the bus in California, and Patrice came from the back of the bus with his phone on to Twitter, and he said, "Did you put this on here?" I said, "No, I didn't put that on there." He said, "Don't you think it's early for that?" So,
well, that's what that's why he's good for the organization, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'd be wrong in saying that he isn't enjoying the fact the team is being successful, but I guess it's that maturity that has him, you know, trying to keep a lid on things and just keep the guys working. But, boy, this season, have I heard people talking about him and his effect on that dressing room and just the kind of player that he is around the team. And it seems like every time somebody needs a jump start in that forward group, they get Patrice Cormier on the line and they're off to the races. Just a simple, reliable game that you get every time out. He's going to win 60% of the faceoffs. He's going to get to the front of the net. He's going to be aggressive, and he's going to have that same energy every shift of every game. And so he's just been a true leader to the team in every respect. And I think he's enjoying that responsibility. He's grown into it well, having been named captain last year and had some time to adjust. and the team is really valuing his presence.
Great stuff, Mitch. It is a Mr. Lube Manitoba Moose game day tonight. Tee it up for us before we let you go.
Yeah, it should be lots of fun to see if the guys can sweep the homestand. Very difficult to beat the same team two games in a row. I know that the Laval Rocket had a good record coming in. They've got some real offensive ability. I think the Moose feel they did a nice job on Sunday, but they also know that they've got to really execute to have that same kind of success tonight. So it'll be fun to see if they can sweep the homestand and get something going or keep something going as they head out on the road for three big games on the weekend.
CFL 60 at 6 tonight on TSN 1290 with Darren Bombing, and then, of course, Mr. Lou, Manitoba Moose, game day, Moose and Laval Rocket Hockey at 7 o'clock with Mitch Peacock on the call. Thanks for this, sir. Enjoy the game.
Thanks much, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Mitch.
That's funny. Don't you think you put this on here?
Yeah.
Don't you think it's a little early?
Cormier sounds like a beauty, huh?
Oh, he is a beauty. I think they could be in the playoffs and have five games left in regular season. He'd be like, "You put this on here? It's not over yet." Moose hockey tonight at 7. We'll take a break. Much more to come on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour, NHL News and Notes still to come. Brian Munns live from Los Angeles as well on the 5-3 loss to the Nashville Predators last night. 20 games into the season now, the Jets a point up on the Predators for second in the Central Division. Captain Blake Wheeler on the loss last night said they just didn't capitalize.
Oh, shoot. I mean, we had a bunch of 3-on-2s that we just didn't make plays, you know what I mean? Didn't execute. That was disappointing, but that's hockey. You know, puck's going to bounce weird sometimes, and you know, I think for the most part we're trying to do the right things out there. They gave it to us just as much as we gave it to them tonight. They capitalized more in the second period, and we were just playing from behind.
It was different to watch them chase the game last night because I thought they played well while they did it, whereas opposed to the first two games, they just fell apart completely. Columbus, I didn't think they had it. The Montreal game was a little different where, you know, they were down and they were going back and forth. But this was interesting to watch them. They poured it on in the third period, and I know you had your thoughts on that.
Well,
but
yeah, after it's 5-1, they poured on. Woo-hoo! That's normal, right?
Well, they had a very good first period, too. They were 1-1.
Well, yeah, they had a draw on the first period, sure, but to pour it on when you're down 5-1 to start the third, that's going to happen in essentially every single game you watch in the NHL, right? The other team's going to lay back a little bit and let you bring it to some degree.
To that extent, though?
Yeah, I believe so. It wasn't mind blowing to me what they accomplished in the third period. The scary part is in the meat of the game. The high danger scoring chances, they lost that battle 7-1 to the Preds in the second period, and a lot of it had to do with the three power plays that they gave fed up to this Preds, right? When you've got a power play that lethal in the Preds, you cannot be serving up the tasty dishes of penalty kill situations. That ain't going to work.
We have to break, but Brian Munns will be back to join us and break down the game as well and the road trip that's coming up with three more, all in California this week on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. Your NHL news and notes still to come. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you. plenty of football talk around the corner as well. In the next hour, Milt Stiegel will break down the division finals for us and set up the Grey Cup, as it will be a busy week in Ottawa for the 105th Grey Cup, which you can hear this Sunday right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Also, Darren Bombing has CFL 60 for you tonight at 6 o'clock, and that will be followed by Mr. Lou Manitoba Moose Hockey on the station. Jason Cole is also going to talk some NFL with us at the bottom of the next hour and an hour of your phone calls. And we'll get your thoughts on the Jets-Predators game last night. And it's 20 games into the season. We'll talk about that and start talking Grey Cup with you as well. That's on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9. This next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center, and it is with Jets analyst Mr. Brian Munns. Good morning, Brian. Long trip?
Morning, guys. Good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. How long of a flight is that from Nashville to L.A.?
I saw about 3 hours of it. You know what? It was actually the longest flight that we could remember since the team's come back now 6+ years. Whatever it be, it's a little wider going across the United States than it is for a lot of the flights that the Jets have, whether they're coming down to L.A. here to go to the West Coast, whether you go to Dallas, the furthest tip in the Central Division, or if you're going to Florida the other way. I think we were pretty close to 4.5 hours in the air last night, so it was a long one, but the guys have the day off today to kind of get rested up once they finally wake up here probably in 3 or 4 hours later on this morning.
Boy, it sure looks like that home power play that Nashville has got going, clipping along at 38% or so, Munsey. You just can't feed that beast.
No, and that's kind of what Paul and a lot of the players, Troy, were talking about after the game last night, was just the penalties that they took. The Bufflin one for me, that Nashville was able to score to make it 3-1 when Kyle Turris scored midway through the second period to go up by 2. That one really hurt. And then to get the other goal again off the stick of Matthias Ekholm, just a bomb from the blue line late in the frame, was kind of the Achilles heel. Like, the Jets played good on their power play. You know, they were 1-for-2, but Nashville had that extra opportunity last night and really took advantage. And for whatever reason it was kind of an off game for a lot of their top-end players, which we really haven't said very often this year. It's been a really positive, in my mind, for what this hockey club's been able to do, as they've had all four lines going. But it was a tough night last night for the top six, for sure.
Regardless of the outcome, how do these two teams match up? There's four more games between them, Central Division rivals, of course. What did you take from the game and how these two teams sort of line up against each other?
Well, it's interesting because that was kind of the storyline going into the game yesterday as to how Nashville has really controlled Winnipeg. The Jets had dropped 4 of 5 games inside Bridgestone Arena going into last night, and with how well the Jets have been playing this year, you kind of thought, okay, you know, maybe this is the year they can get rolling. They were 4-0 against Central Division teams going in last night, but you've got to give Nashville a lot of credit from what they've been able to do, obviously getting to the Stanley Cup final last year, and then, you know, the moves that David Poile made, you wondered what they would have this year. But getting Kyle Turris in that big trade involving Colorado and Ottawa as their number two guy, with Ryan Johansson being their top line center, and then kind of the key for me was adding Nick Bonino from Pittsburgh. You know, that's three really good centers down the middle that are players that make it tough on you. And I know Kyle Turris isn't the biggest player, but, boy, he's got some pretty soft hands. And you look at that line right now with Craig Smith on one side, especially for Smith, who we've seen over the last couple of years is a really gifted goal scorer. And I talked to him in our pregame show yesterday, and they were just thrilled to be able to add a really skilled, finessed guy like Kyle Turris. That's a big add here for the Nashville Predators, and even with Ryan Ellis out of the lineup on the back end, they've got six defensemen that get the puck up in a hurry, and I thought that might have been the difference, especially in the first half of the game yesterday. The ice wasn't very good, but both teams play on that same ice, but I thought Nashville adapted better. And they started snapping the puck around. They were a little harder on their passes, and Winnipeg just kind of seemed to be bobbling that puck as the game wore on and just kind of couldn't get a grip of the way that game was being played last night.
Your thoughts about how Matthew Perreault is being used at this point?
Well, he's been good. You know, there's no question about it. You look at the fact that he's quote-unquote playing on the fourth line with Matt Hendricks and Joel Armia, but to see him succeed on the power play, I think, was the biggest thing. And you know, he's scored 4 goals now since he's come back into the lineup here, and I just like the confidence that he brings to this group. And we talked about it after the New Jersey game, where they were so giddy about the fact that he and Hendricks were playing together, a couple of veterans, and kind of brought the best out of Joel Armia as well, because he understands the passion and the love that those two guys play with the game. I think it's been really good. You know, I think last night was kind of a blip on the radar that unfortunately you have to kind of remember, but you want to try and throw away at the same time. But I think Matty Perreault's been big, and I think Adam Lowry's been a big return as well. When you look at what he's been able to do since coming back, he's been the best Jet in the faceoff circle for a number of games. He was at 69% again last night. And just to have that experience down the middle, and size and grit too, because I think you know, it's tough to play these Western Conference games. It's not going to get any easier coming up here in Los Angeles tomorrow, and then on the weekend with Anaheim, San Jose back-to-back. So Jets are in a pretty big road trip here right now, but to have the players healthy they have up front, I think is a big thing, Troy, that that you allude to right now, where you've got these guys that know what it takes to play at this level and against these kind of teams.
And is Joel Armia elevating his game? Is Matthew Perreault helping that, or is a little bit of both going on?
I think probably a little bit of both, JT. I think Joel feels better about what they're able to do because, you know, as he looks at himself as a fourth-line player right now, they're not getting fourth-line minutes and they're not getting fourth-line assignments. So I think it's been an enabling here right now for, with Perreault back into the lineup and how good Hendricks has played here lately, that Joel Armia gets a little bit more ice and he's used on special teams. That's one area I thought that Paul Maurice did a really good job on talking about yesterday before the game, was explaining right now that all 12 of his forwards have a valuable piece to some special teams. And it's not just 5-on-5 minutes that your players are playing up front right now. You're getting some power play. You're getting some penalty kill time. So I think right now for all these guys that are in the lineup right now for the Winnipeg Jets, they have to be happy with the opportunities that they're being given on the ice.
One of the biggest surprises this year in the NHL is to see the Kings on top of the Pacific. Your thoughts on what John Stevens is accomplishing with the Kings so far?
Well, they came out of the gate flying. That's the biggest thing for me, is to how good they were, and they were able to build up some points. You know, they've got Vegas right on their heels right now, just 1 point behind, and Vegas beat them on Sunday 4-2 at T-Mobile Arena to get themselves back to within a point. They have been a little bit banged up here as of late. I was doing some work on that game on the plane coming in here last night, and when you take a look at the team right now, you know, they've lost a few guys like Marian Gabrick. They don't have Kyle Clifford. They don't have Jeff Carter. So Clifford and Carter are really big physically, and they kind of wear on you, so that might be an advantage for Winnipeg. And Jonathan Quick's kind of come back down to earth here after getting out of the gate with a really good start as well. But, you know, they've got a good team. They've got some guys there. They've added Brooks Like at forward, who's been a longtime guy from Washington that you know. But anytime you've got the Dowdies and the Kopitars, and you look at Dustin Brown and Nick Shore and Tanner Pearson, kind of the guys that have done a lot of damage against Winnipeg over the last number of years here, this will be a pretty good test coming up tomorrow afternoon. Or tomorrow night, pardon me.
Yeah, tomorrow night against the LA Kings right here on TSN 1290. It's 20 games in. Brian, what do you make of this team sitting second in the Central?
Well, I think everybody should be thrilled with where they are. And I know it's tough to say that after the way the game was played last night, but you take a look big picture right now, and if somebody would have told you that through the first quarter of the season that they would only lose 5 games in regulation time, they'd be 8-3 against the Western Conference, they'd only have 1 loss against the Central Division, and they'd have the goaltending that Connor Hellebuck has provided so far, I think we all would have taken it, that watch this club on a daily basis. We talked to Matty Perreault about it after the game last night, and you talk to the players inside the room, and to a man, everybody brings up Hellebuck right away. And so the year that he went through last year, and kind of the battles that he had with Michael Hutchinson, the pressure of being the two goalies, you know, it put them in a tough situation. But for Connor Hellebuck to have the game that he's had, the addition of Matt Hendricks has been bigger than anybody could ever believe, more off the ice than on the ice. And the guys in Nashville were talking about it last night. Had a long chat with former Jet Paul Fenton, who's the assistant GM with the Predators. And, you know, they had him earlier in his career, and he had mentioned the fact that Hendricks down 11 pounds right now has been a big part to his game since he played in Nashville. And and just what he does bringing the older guys together and the younger guys. So I think right now those are the big keys. And then if you want to look at it as well on the defensive side of things, until the last game, you had a healthy Toby Enstrom. You had a really good Tyler Myers and Dmitry Kulikov. For me, Myers and Kulikov have really rounded out the blue line here for the Jets. So they've done a lot of good things to make their team better, but the players deserve a lot of credit with the way that they've got this year underway. And you know what? They've got these points right now that nobody can take away. I think that's the biggest thing for me is they've put some stuff in the bank here, and whenever they hit a little bit of a blip on the calendar, which maybe right now, maybe coming up in February, who knows, that you know, they don't have to worry about it too much because they've been able to get some points put in the bank that help them.
Tough situation for Ben Chiarot to come into, but do you think, regardless, you'll see some Tucker Poolman this road trip?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I would assume you will. You always have to have an extra defenseman when you come on a road trip like this, and you're so far away from home that right now Poolman is the extra guy. But I didn't think Ben looked that bad last night. I think we all need to remember that he hadn't played in the past 12 games, and he only had one game under his belt, so it was a bit of an adjustment, and the team that Nashville brings was a harder night. You know, you look at the numbers at the end of the night, Chiarot was plus one in a 5-3 loss. That's pretty good for him, and he got 17 and a half minutes. So I think we will see Tucker Poolman at some point, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see the exact same lineup here tomorrow night against the Kings, because as Paul's done a few times, if a team doesn't play the game that they were hoping for, he gives them the opportunity to come right back off the mat and kind of try and redeem themselves here against the Kings tomorrow night.
Great stuff, Brian. We appreciate your time and getting up so early. Enjoy the off day, and we'll talk to you later this week.
Sounds good, guys. We'll chat with you on Friday.
Thanks, Munzee. I don't think there's a chance you see Tucker Poolman in. Like last night, you didn't. No one noticed Ben Chiarot in a negative way. He didn't make any glaring errors out there.
Well, he took a minor, but I didn't have a problem with his game.
That, you're not going to see Tucker Poolman, though.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with his game at all. I'm just wondering if you're going to call him up and give him a game in the next three or four.
I don't think so. Why would you – like if Ben Chiarot is playing at a level that's acceptable and good, I don't think you'd just have a look-see at Tucker Poolman for no reason at all.
I wouldn't mind him getting into one of the back-to-back games. I'd like to see him get another chance. I still think he gives you more than Ben Chiarot does regardless, but Ben played pretty good last night. I was pleasantly surprised.
That's what I was going to say. Like I think that Poolman is a better player than Chiarot. But having said that, I have no problem with the way Chiarot played. That's why I think he might get a game or two, or maybe they might not. He wasn't feeling well. Like he had the flu or a cold when he was called up. He'd been battling that with the Moose. But I don't know. Like it's a tough situation because I didn't have a problem with the way Ben Chiarot played. And maybe if he does have a bad game, then they throw Poolman in. That's you don't think he'll see any action?
That's the only way you see Poolman. Well, they would never take out a guy who's playing at a decent level and they know you're going to put Poolman on his offside like that for a look-see. That's not the way it works to me.
Well, he's Enstrom's out for 8 weeks. So you're going to have Tucker Poolman sit there for 8 weeks not playing?
Well, I'm just saying if Ben Chiarot's playing at a decent level and doesn't give you a reason to take him out of the lineup, they're not going to do it just for fun.
I don't know if they're going to let Tucker Poolman just sit healthy scratch for 8 weeks not playing games. I don't think that's good for him. And I don't see what in 8 weeks of injury time for Toby Enstrom that they wouldn't give him a game a week or something just to get him in there. And Ben's used to sitting. I mean, I could see like four games this week or say in the next eight games, I could see Tucker Poolman getting one or two just for the fact they don't want him sitting for 2 or 3 weeks.
I think it's all up to Ben Chiarot, the level that he plays at.
We'll take a break. Thanks to Brian Munns. This was a presentation of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. Your NHL news and notes are next on The Big Show on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on the NHL Power Hour on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290, the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour, I should say. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. And yesterday, gentlemen, prior to the Arizona Coyotes-Toronto Maple Leafs game, Mike Babcock was asked a question about Marner. and Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews not playing together, and he sniped, I'll describe it as, at the reporter, saying, well, when you coach the team, you can coach it the way you want. I coach the team, I'll coach it the way I want. Here's what I like. I like to win games, so I'm going to put the best lineup out there that I feel can win games. After the Arizona game last night, Mike Babcock started his press conference off with this comment.
Start here. There was a lady, Rosie, was in the front. They asked me a question. I saw my response today. It was embarrassing. I was a jackass. So I don't know if she's around, but next time she comes in, I apologize. That's not the right way to treat anybody. So disrespectful. No, I saw it later, and it was disrespectful.
So I've seen this happen before, and I've seen coaches with short tempers, you know, go at a reporter. And what I've seen is on the side or the next day, the coach, once his presser's done or before it, take that reporter aside and go, hey, look, I didn't mean to snipe at you or chirp at you like that. I apologize. I've never seen it publicly like that, where he's just come out and said, basically disrespectful. I was a jackass the way I answered your question.
Which speaks to me of the man that Babcock is. When you take it publicly like that. But interestingly, that's not the first time he's answered questions like that.
No.
When he moved Marner down to the fourth line, he had the same sort of back and forth with the media at that point in time. So I wonder why he feels that way specifically about this back and forth. But this, to me, this is – and when I heard that yesterday, it didn't surprise me, because we've heard Mike Babcock deal with the media when they start questioning his decisions on where guys are going to be in the lineup. So – an interesting response and apology from him, and not a surprising – I wasn't surprised whatsoever when I first heard him say it, because we've heard him talk to the media about that with his personnel decisions.
He's very choppy with the media. So it didn't stand out to me when he answered it that way. But when – you know, I guess when I heard his apology last night and I re-listened to how he answered the question – I think it's the whole, when you coach a team, you can coach it the way you want. When I, you know, everybody's aware of that. That's what I think is unnecessary, where, you know, there's a different way of saying, there's only, you're never going to coach that team.
He's being combative, right?
Yeah, you're being combative. You don't have to.
Unnecessarily as well. Yeah. On a fair, like, anytime there's a fair question, just.
Like Paul Mauricio is going to think that response a little bit better and present it in a more gentle type manner than. Just being brash like that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Now, that being said, Arizona has won three straight, all against Canadian teams.
Just ripping through Canada. What the heck?
Save for here in Winnipeg.
Uh-huh.
They beat Ottawa, they beat Montreal, and they've now beat Toronto.
Just a little bit more of an indication that truly the Jets are Canada's best team.
Well, let's talk about it. After 20 games in, are the Winnipeg Jets the best Canadian team right now in the National Hockey League? Toronto, in 22 games, so two more games played, has one more point than the Jets at 28. And Montreal and Ottawa are not in the playoff picture. And then you go to the Jets, highest ranking Canadian team in the West as well.
I'd say right now it's between the Leafs and the Jets, with Calgary knocking on the door as well, maybe between those three teams, and I'd say you can't. There's no way to give a real, true indication or answer to that outside of looking at some of the underlying numbers and using things of that nature, things that will project a level of success long term, more so than just looking at this right now. Sorry, and saying which team is the best. I think that's a pretty good three-way horse race. And I'm going to lean towards Toronto, although defensively I think there's still some level of suspect there with Toronto. But looking at – I mean, when you look at Toronto and their third line is Marner and Bozak with JVR, I believe, that's downright frightening.
I think the one thing – and I agree with you. I would take Toronto still as the best team in Canada, but the one – thing, the new development that makes it interesting is Connor Hellebuck's ascension into the higher end of the NHL goalie rankings, and that's something the other, like, Freddie Anderson, solid. Mike Smith's actually having a surprisingly decent season, but if Hellebuck can continue his level of play so far, that might be the one thing that could separate them from the other Canadian teams. But even with Toronto's kind of lack of a true number one defenseman, I think you have to look at their roster up and down and the coach as well and say that's still Canada's best team. Although I think the gap's narrowed a lot more than it was early in the year.
Be a great seven-game series in the Cup.
We'll ask you your thoughts on that as well on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9. Up next, so Milt Stegall joins us to tee up the 105th Grey Cup, which you can hear this Sunday right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Some football talk this hour. Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report will break down Week 11 and tee up Week 12 for us in the National Football League. We'll hear from Tyler Myers in the next segment after the 5-3 loss to the Winnipeg Jets. He had another goal last night in the loss for the Jets as they now have an off day in Los Angeles and will take on the Kings tomorrow night. Anaheim Friday afternoon as it will be American Thanksgiving and then San Jose Saturday night before they return home on Monday to host division rival the Minnesota Wild. We're also going to tee up the Boss Pizza fan line for you and take an hour of your calls at 9 o'clock. But right now we'll get back into the CFL, your radio home of the 105th Grey Cup, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca is where you can hear the classic live from our nation's capital. And a big part of the CFL on TSN panel that is there is Mr. Milt Stegall. Good morning, Milt. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing well, thank you. How's the city of Ottawa and how are they preparing for the 105th Grey Cup?
It's cold. It's very, 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 very cold. I'm like, am I in Winnipeg or Regina or Yellowknife? It's cold, but I mean, the city is getting excited. You know, the teams come in today. The Grey Cup gets here today, so you know, it's still early in the week, but everyone here involved is really excited.
Jason Moss swears up and down publicly he doesn't regret it. Milt, your thoughts on his remarkable decision at the end of that game?
He regrets it. He definitely regrets it. I don't know if it was just. You know, this is his second year as a head coach. I don't know if the stage was too big for him or if things were moving too fast or he just overthought it. But he'll regret it, but he can't admit it. His players, I'm sure they're mad at it, but publicly they can't come out and say it because they don't want to shame their coach or second-guess their coach. But, I mean, that was a bad move, and he'll regret it. Even if he goes on to win 10 Grey Cups, that play right there will be talked about for the rest of his coaching career.
So I saw you guys break it down on the panel, and we've been doing it on the show, and everybody across Canada has been doing it. But how do you come to that conclusion as a coach?
You know what? I've never been a coach. I always say this, and I'll never be a coach. But I don't understand that. And I've talked to coaches and GMs, and all of them said the same thing. They don't understand. They were baffled. If you looked at the replay when they showed Edmonton's GM, he folded his arms like, what's going on? And the one thing that really concerned me was his team – had produced, they had gone through a couple other third and longs, and they actually got him, so you know their confidence level. You know Mike Riley and that offense, their confidence level was high that they were going to be able to actually convert that. It was third and four, and even if they don't get it, Calgary is backed up, so you have an opportunity for your defense to stop them and still put you in a position to tie the game. So the reason why he did that, I mean, I understand he said he wanted to win the game and not tie the game, but you want to give your team an opportunity to win the game going into overtime, and he definitely didn't do that. So like I said before, he's saying publicly he doesn't regret it, but like I said, that's going to haunt him for the rest of his coaching career.
Calgary did lose 3 in a row prior to that West Final, and were down 14-0 in this game. Were you impressed with how they responded and came back?
Impressed. That's Calgary. That's the Calgary team we've seen in the past. Of course, they had that three-game downtime. I don't know if they were just relaxed and overconfident, knowing that, you know, their position in the playoffs were pretty much solidified. But they came back. They weathered the storm. They went up. They allowed Edmonton to get back in the game, but they finished it off. And that's the Calgary team we've seen. I love the fact that they use Roy Fintz as a running back. I've been saying this all year long. He's a great asset to that team. No disrespect to Jerome Messam, but they need to mix it up. Jerome Messam has a certain style of running, and teams get used to it. You pretty much know he's going downhill, north and south, and you add a running back like Roy Finch into the mix, and that totally throws opposing defense off. So I like what they did with those two guys. Hopefully they continue it in the Grey Cup, and they have a pretty good opportunity to win it.
A lot of people you know, wanted, especially in this city and across Canada, to see Kevin Glenn finally get that Grey Cup. Not going, Saskatchewan loses to Toronto. Before we get into that game, just talk about Kevin Glenn's performance in that game, and sort of that's been kind of his what's plagued him throughout his career.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Kevin like a brother, but that was it right there. You look at the game before that, and he just lit it up. You know, he was dynamite, and everyone's saying, this is going to be the year. You know, this is not the time to rotate the quarterbacks in and out, but then we get to this performance a few days ago, and he stinks it up. So that's been the MO, unfortunately, on Kevin. You know, one game, he looks like a barn burner, and next game, he's burning it up. So it's unfortunate that he's not going to get that opportunity this year. I don't know what next year holds for Kevin. I know he still wants to play, but that performance right there, I know he didn't want to end his career on that performance. And then on the other hand, I saw some good things in Brandon Bridge. Maybe he can be their future. I know it was just, you know, three quarters of a game, basically, but I saw his confidence level up. I saw the fact that he was able to play well on one of the biggest stages he's ever been on. So there's something positive coming out of that. But as far as Kevin goes, hopefully his career doesn't end on a game like that, because that was a pretty bad performance.
And Chris Jones came out saying that they'd love to have Kevin Glenn back, that he's still going to be a highly coveted backup. And I agree with you, your point on Brandon Bridge, where sort of opening up and blossoming here, you wonder what he's going to grow into. Ultimately, we've heard James Franklin. You wonder about the situation with Zach Collaros. Who do you think starts at behind center for the Rough Riders in week one next year, Milt?
That's going to be a good question. I'm sure I still think they'll go after James Franklin. Will James Franklin be there? You know, he'll be highly coveted by a few teams. Saskatchewan probably be looking for a quarterback. Montreal, we don't know the situation. Is Ricky Ray going to retire after this? So there's going to be some openings right there. And the thing about James Franklin, we haven't seen that much of him, but because teams are in need of a quarterback and he has promise, he has potential, he's going to be highly sought after and paid well. So it's going to be a lot of things going on this offseason, because if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have an opportunity to win. I don't care what other players you have around him. So there's going to be some quarterbacks, unproven guys, who are going to get some good money this year, because there's just a lack of good quarterbacks out there, good young quarterbacks out there, and there are a few teams that need some.
Well, in old man time, Ricky Ray is still getting it done, and a lot of people wondering if he'll come back as well. What are your thoughts on the Toronto Argos and the Grey Cup? Stamps have a 7-point favorite going into the game. Do the Argos have a shot of pulling this off?
Without a doubt, because of the man you just mentioned, Ricky Ray. You know, that guy, he's money. He's not what he used to be, but he doesn't need to be that, because he understands the game much better than just about anyone who's ever played. He understands what he needs to do on certain plays. You just look at that 3rd and 5, and the fact that he was able to go to his running back, not one of his big receivers, S.J. Green, Posey, Amani Edwards. He went to his running back, a rookie running back, because he had that confidence in him. And only a player like Ricky Ray would take that chance right there and have success. So it's hard to bet against Calgary, but when you have a quarterback like Ricky Ray, who's won 3 cups, 3 Grey Cups, who could be the first quarterback to win 4 Grey Cups, I mean, it's truly amazing what he's been able to do at this age.
Milt, why I think Toronto's in a pile of trouble in this game, and I think the 7-point spread is a gift from God, is I think the mentality of Calgary, they gave that away to Ottawa last year. And I think for them, man, to be in this position, to be back at the Grey Cup a year after more or less being humiliated in losing that game to Ottawa, it probably feels to their core like about a month or 2 weeks has passed since that Grey Cup where they want to make amends for it. And I just think they're going to be wicked razor sharp and so motivated to claim that cup that they believe is theirs.
I wouldn't even say a month. I would say 2 minutes. That's what it feels like for them. But you look at Toronto, and they're going to be the loose team. Because you think about it, this team was assembled basically 2 months before the season started. Jim Popp and Tressman came in at the last second, trading for a guy like S.J. Green, bringing Bear Woods in, Victor Butler, all these guys. And now they're on the biggest stage. They're going to be the loose team. For the most part, they're playing with house money. They understand the pressure is on Calgary. They were the favorite coming into this year. They're the favorite now. Right now, they're a 7-point favorite. So there's no pressure on Toronto. So they're going to be the loose team. Sometimes that can work to their advantage. We'll see if they're able to use it. And they're not a slouch. They're not a slouch team. I know they didn't have the best regular season. You know, as far as the CFL goes, the worst team in the West had a better record than the best team in the East as far as the playoffs go. But they are still in the Grey Cup, and they still have Ricky Ray as their quarterback. So you have to give them a chance in winning this game.
Well, and Milt, how many players in the CFL would love a do-over in the Grey Cup? And I, you know, listening to Dave Naylor's post-game report about Bo Levi Mitchell telling him it's not that they weren't prepared last Grey Cup. It's just when he looks back at the game film, he says he wish he had done more things because Ottawa showed him a thing or two that he wasn't expecting. Just that thought process of how prepared they're going to be now, saying that, you know, we weren't not prepared, but I just felt I wasn't prepared as I should have been.
Well, I don't understand that. You have to understand you're in the
group. Yeah, I don't get it either. It just speaks to the swagger they went into that game with, does it not?
Well, it does, but then, like I said, on the other end, Toronto, they're nice and relaxed. You don't want to be overly tense saying, okay, This is we have to do everything in our power to win this game. You want to be somewhat relaxed. This is the biggest game of the year. Everyone was expecting you to win last year. Everyone was expecting you to get back to this game. But that can work to your disadvantage if you're out there pressing. You still have to go out there and be relaxed and understand, okay, there's going to be some adverse situations, but as long as we stay relaxed, we have an opportunity to win this game. But now it seems like they're putting more pressure on themselves to go out there and perform, and I don't know if that's the best approach to have. Just go out there and do what got you here, and if you do those things and you execute your game plan, you have a great opportunity to win in the game.
I know you're not a prediction guy, Milt, but when you break down the positions, and this is maybe an unfair question to ask you off the top of your head, it's hard to find a position that Toronto holds an advantage over Calgary, except for maybe the linebacker position. It's right across the board here. It would appear that Calgary has an edge.
They're not too far off with their defensive line. I mean, I know Calgary has the best defensive line, but Toronto, that defensive line with Butler and Lemon on the outside and Wynn and Lang in the middle, they're right there. I would say Calgary's 1A and Toronto's 1B. I mean, they both produce 50 sacks during the year. They tie for sacks, so they can run with them with that defensive line. And that may be determining the game, though, that is what happens in the trenches, because both of these teams, they try to run the ball, have to protect your quarterback. So I would put their defensive line right there with the Calgary's defensive line.
Should be a good week, and it should be a great game. It might not be a classic as it was last year, Milt, but you expecting a good, evenly matched game?
I'm expecting the game. I'm expecting some points to be scored, and they may not be just on offense. You know, we have two great return guys, and Marquise Jackson and Roy Finch, the best returner in the game. So I could see those guys having an impact on this game also.
Thanks very much for your time. Enjoy Grey Cup week, Milt, and it should be a good one. We look forward to some analysis from you after it's all done.
Sounds great. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Milt. 64-31.
That's your final score prediction?
That's what the two games combined between Calgary and Toronto. Toronto averaged 15.5 points against Calgary per game this year. They are going to get their asses waxed.
Toronto is?
Yep. They'll lose by 20-plus.
Oh,
I love it.
Oh, I see a wager coming our way.
Calgary, what I touched on there with Milt, for them to be humiliated, and to me, it wasn't like he was underprepared. I think that's a bunch of crap. Calgary got the turnovers early on in that game, just served it up to Ottawa, and Calgary came flying down the stretch, something fierce, 10 lengths behind, to still not be able to close out that deal. Remember how close they were to closing it out. I think that sets up real badly, poorly, here for Toronto. And that D line is going to cause Ricky Ray an immense amount of trouble.
I want to emphasize, it wasn't like he said it's not that they weren't prepared. He just wished he'd watched a little bit more film, because there was a couple things in the game that Ottawa did that he said he hadn't seen.
Destruction.
Or wasn't prepared or something. Not prepared. Like they prepared like he said we did every week. I just wish I had done a little bit more given it was the Grey Cup game.
That Toronto D line played pretty solidly.
I like the Toronto D,
and I mean that's going to be their kind of like Calgary all the time, right? Get pressure on Bulev and Mitchell, you have a chance. I think Calgary wins the game, but I think I would probably tangle with Toronto on the spread.
So would I.
I might give a little go on.
We're going to have a conversation off air then, brother. Both you suckers.
It's going to end pretty quickly.
Let's do it. I like the Toronto offense. They have a running game. They have receivers, and I like the Toronto defense. I think they can get some stuff done. I don't know if it's enough to win the game, but I think that if this spread goes bigger than 7, I feel a six-pack coming on. I'm just saying. We'll take a break on the big show and get into more of the Jets' 5-3 loss to the Nashville Predators last night when we return to TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, 22 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, and back to the Jets' 5-3 loss to the Nashville Predators last night. They still hold a one-point lead on the Predators for second in the Central Division. 12-5-3 with 27 points. The Predators in 20 games are 12-6-2 with 26 points. The Jets are now in Los Angeles. They'll have an off day today in L.A. Yeah. So, that's a long flight, and you get in late, but then you get to sleep in, and there's no practice, or what do you do in La La Land?
Do some shopping.
Shopping?
Chilling. Some Netflix and chill. I don't know what you do. You do whatever you want.
Again, I don't think you know what that term means.
Didn't you guys have a discussion about this when Matt, was it Liebel?
Yeah.
Matt Lobo?
Yeah.
Matt Lobo?
Yeah, he wanted to Netflix and chill with me, and once again, we had to explain... We had to explain what the term means.
Did you?
He does not want a Netflix and chill anymore, which is that's fine for both parties. I'll watch a movie with them.
Can't there be different degrees or?
Oh no! Oh
Netflix
no,
and chill. No,
no, no,
there's
no,
only
no.
one. There's only one. Yeah. Okay, one speed. Okay.
Yeah, one way road.
Fair.
What's that Simpsons episode when the babysitter was over and Bart was jealous and? The guy sat down and he said, thanks for having me over. And then he's like, oh, it's really hot in here. Mind if I take my shirt off? And Bart's like, what? And then 2 minutes later, he's like, oh, now my pants are chafing me. It's so hot in here. That's what Netflix and chill is? Disgusting! Anyway, Tyler Myers had this thought on the poor second period for the Jets last night in which saw them give up three goals in the second frame.
We didn't like our second period at all. Down 4-1 going into the third, we just told ourselves, to go as hard as we can and to work as hard as we can to, give ourselves a shot. And, I like the way we battled in the third to try and come back, but, it was just too little too late.
You are just not going to see a more tragic effort than on the Bonino goal, the fifth goal there. What the hell was that? If that happened in beer league, what is that? What was that?
Well, Myers blamed himself, but
Nick
Ehlers did a little bit of a flyby there,
They both, yeah. It was like, just get one of you guys got to help out Helly a little bit there.
And here's Tyler Myers on that goal, the Bonino goal.
Didn't like that one at all. You could tell, I had the mindset of just trying to grab it and go, being down and, just hopped over my stick and, I didn't like that goal on my part for sure.
Just communication breakdown.
Yeah, it hit Bucky's shoulder. It started bouncing. I think Nicky thought I was getting it and I thought I was getting it too. And it just, bounced over and guy made a nice move.
Garbage game, more or less, right, from the second period on, I suppose, unless you want to drink the Kool-Aid of the third period push. But just one of those games that, the boys play, you play well for X number of games. This happens to every team. You go on, you have a bit of a dog. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the bottom line is this can be, you just kind of pass it off as a dog, as a blip, and you move forward and have a much better outing against the Kings. I think as a team, they've kind of earned that in such a game.
Almost like it was due in a way, too.
Yeah.
Like, there were some games where they kind of got away with a couple of things, and maybe this was just kind of a harbinger of some of the numbers that have gone their way so far this season. But They did they had a bit of an off one against Montreal, remember, where we were like, just make it the one game. Like, just have the one off, you move forward and play well after that. And I believe they won four straight after the Habs loss. So make it. Hey, if you can rattle off three wins, four wins, drop an ugly one, that's an all right streak to be in.
So, what are your thoughts on the LA Kings then, as they go into Los Angeles, play them tomorrow night?
Well,
I think it's a game they should win.
Yeah, I agree with you. To some degree, there's some level of smoke and mirrors involved, I think, with what the Kings are doing, and they're just precariously sitting on top of the Pacific, hotly pursued by the Golden Knights. Like, what a bizarre situation in the Pacific, right? So I agree. The Jets can go take care of business against the Kings, and this should be one of the teams that the Jets can also utilize and impose the asset of speed here. Like, this is one of the teams they should be able to utilize their speed against in the Los Angeles Kings. As sound as the Kings can be, the Jets should be able to go make some noise here.
See, that's funny because I don't see that at all. And if anything, if to be honest, if any of the two teams were smoke and mirrors, it might be the Jets as opposed to the LA Kings. You know, when the Jets are kind of relying on a 930 save
that's fair.
Percentage and
that's fair.
And some of the numbers. I think they're evenly matched teams. I think, you know, the Jets for a long time tried to build themselves after the LA Kings and being a bigger team that
the
can still
game.
Skate with
When's
you.
When's the last time we've heard that term?
Heavy game?
That was the term, right, with the Kings, the Blues. Yeah. That's Gonzo.
Last night was a pretty heavy game too, though. But I think it'll be a close game. I really don't see a whole lot of difference between the two teams. Both very similar goal differential, goalies playing well. I think it'll be tight.
We'll tee it up and get your thoughts as well on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9. But up next, we'll talk some NFL with our good friend Jason Cole on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
I'm back on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki at TSN 1290. A half hour, or an hour, rather, of your phone calls in half an hour on the Boss Pizza fan line. Love to get your thoughts on the Jets' 5-3 loss to Nashville. What stood out to you? And also, it's 20 games into the season. Are you buying what the Jets are selling? Are you all in? Or are you still apprehensive of what this team can do and whether they can make the playoffs or not? They continue their 3-game road trip tomorrow night in Los Angeles against the Kings. And then, of course, a American Thanksgiving afternoon game in Anaheim on Friday right here on TSN 1290. And then they'll wrap up the 4-game road trip Saturday night in San Jose against the Sharks. We're going to talk some NFL now. And when we do so, we like to do it with a good pal, Jason Cole, the Bleacher Report. Good morning, Jason. How are you today?
I'm great. What's going on?
Doing well, thank you. Interesting Monday nighter last night. Pete Carroll goes for a fake field goal before the half, doesn't get it. And then they miss a 51-yarder to tie the game. 2 field goals. I don't know if that's the reason they lost the game. The O-line did what it does again in Seattle. But your impressions of Atlanta getting a big win on the road in Seattle last night?
Atlanta's starting to do what they're capable of. If you do some of the look at some advanced stats like yards per play differential and yards per pass differential, which is a little bit more egg-headed than most talk shows like to get into. But if you start doing that kind of stuff, you look, Atlanta's got some really good numbers this year. Their defense is so much better than it was a year ago. And the offense has obviously trailed a little bit as they transition to a new offensive coordinator. But there's still a lot of talent there. So this is a team that I think over the second half of the season has, you know, they've started to right the ship here the last 2 weeks with 2 big victories, you know, dominated Dallas and then go on the road to Seattle and get a win. I think that you're going to see Atlanta really start to take off in the second half of the season. But I will say this. I don't know what Pete Carroll's thinking on that fake field goal. Because as somebody pointed out, even if Luke Wilson gets beyond the line of scrimmage on that play, he's still got about 20 yards to run, 25 yards to run, and he's not the most fleet-footed guy. So that was a really odd decision on that fake field goal. And the other thing is they beat themselves with a couple of turnovers in the first half. You know, the interception by Wilson and then the fumble by Wilson that led to a defensive score by Atlanta.
What's Kansas City going to do with their offense, Jason?
They're going to stand by Alex Smith the rest of the way. Look, they're not ready to start Mahomes. And Mahomes is
a great talent who is not trained in what Andy Reid wants his quarterback to do yet. It's going to take a little while. But he may be the most physically gifted quarterback that Andy Reid's had. And that's saying a lot because obviously Donovan McNabb is very gifted as well. But I think it's the people who are thinking that Mahomes is going to play real soon. I mean, unless the floor caves in or the ceiling caves in on Alex Smith, I think they're riding Alex Smith all the way to the end of the season, but then they're done. And that's how they're going to play this thing out.
I listened to Tony Dungy post-game talk about the Chiefs sort of reining in their offense and their four of the five losses and just doing the 5-10-yard plays. Do you see the same thing? And if so, why are they changing what Alex Smith was doing in the first six games?
Well, because defenses adjust and they say, look, we're not going to let you throw that kind of stuff. And there's no – look, they've got two legit weapons in Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, and they were getting through with the rookie running back played great in the first six games, right? All of a sudden, everybody figured out the rookie running back. He gets – and he slows down a little bit because of how much they were using him, right? And his stats have really fallen off. He's still a good player, but just – he's not dominating the league the way that he did in the first six games. So then all you got to do is really take away Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, which is not easy, but there's no next weapon. There's nobody like, you know, Chris Conley's not stepping up and becoming a dominant force. Charkandic West is still just a third down passing situation back. They don't have that next guy who, you know, can keep defense is honest. And then there is the Alex Smith factor, which is when you play zone defense against him, particularly in the red zone, he doesn't have confidence in his arm to fit the ball into tight spots. So he just patently refuses to throw the ball into a tight window. And he did it against Pittsburgh. That's why they lost. This last week against the Giants, same thing. Refused to throw the ball into a tight window, and they didn't score. They settled for field goals rather than getting touchdowns, and that has been the story of them in critical games against good defenses for as long as Alex Smith has been the quarterback. That's where he hits a wall.
Five interceptions on 14 passes is what we saw from Nathan Peterman. Is that the end of the Nathan Peterman experiment?
It should be for this year. I mean, Sean McDermott did that kid a huge disservice. By putting him out there and hanging that on him. I mean, after the third interception, you should have pulled him. And just because everybody's always going to remember five interceptions and a half. And he's always going to have to live with that. You know, two or three, okay. You know, you get through that and, you know, okay, it was a bad day. But it wasn't a historically bad day, right? And that's what Peterman has. And it was just obvious the kid wasn't ready for the situation. So why did you do that to him in any way, shape, or form? So to me, I put that one all on McDermott for what happened in that situation.
That's going to be interesting. Where's Tyrod Taylor go? Is there a market for him?
Yeah, it's a backup. I mean, look, there's a reason why McDermott made this decision, and that is Tyrod Taylor's not that good. But it was still a bad decision in that you're going to a rookie who's a fifth-round draft pick who is not ready. So you just you ride it out with Tyrod Taylor and then go back in the draft or in free agency and you find a quarterback somehow who, you know, to get rid of Tyrod Taylor. But no, Tyrod Taylor is just – he's a guy who should be a really great backup for you, only has to play, say, three or four games a year at most. And if he has to play much more than that, then he gets exposed. And he got exposed in the previous two games where teams kept him in the pocket and tried to force him to become a passer, and he's not a great passer. But that's typical of a lot of guys in the NFL who are on that second level who, you know, just don't have quite enough arm talent to make it work.
OC Mike McCoy gets fired in Denver. Was that the right move to make for Denver?
They should have never hired him in the first place. I was stunned when they hired him because this is a guy who, when he was about to go to San Diego, and people don't remember this, but he got the San Diego job after that year where they made the playoffs in Denver with Tim Tebow at quarterback, right? Well, he was going to get fired that year by John Fox and have Adam Gase become the offensive coordinator then. But he was lucky enough to get the San Diego job in the interim, and then they brought him back when most people knew he wasn't that good. So, you know, my problem with what Denver's done is they should have hired Kyle Shanahan all along to just completely come in and revamp that offense. And, you know, they shouldn't have allowed Kyle to go to San Francisco. And Kyle probably would have gone to Denver and made it work. It just, you know, you have the Mike Shanahan-Elway thing, and, you know, there's all sorts of crossover there. But that was the hire that they should have made. And that would have solved Denver's problems a lot more than bringing in Vance Joseph, who's a nice guy and pretty good defensive, you know, defensive coach. But don't do that with Mike McCoy. That was a sad marriage of a guy without a whole lot of great ideas.
Can Aaron Rodgers be the first NFL player to win MVP by not playing?
That's a great question, and possibly yes.
What do they do there? Do they just keep going this route, or are they looking? Do you hear anything?
I have not heard a word about them, you know, looking around. Now, Ted Thompson keeps everything close to the vest, but there's only one quarterback out there that you can get who's going to immediately upgrade you, and that's, you know, Kaepernick. And I don't think they want to go down that path. That's just, even though the kid was born in Milwaukee and, you know, native of Wisconsin, they don't want to deal with alienating their fans. And I mean, this is the ultimate test of the whole Kaepernick blackballing, which is how far a team's willing to go in losing before they say, we got to have somebody. We got to have a guy who can play. And let's bring him in and see what he can do. And this is where I think it's starting to try people's patience, because I'm looking at, you know, a lot of fan reaction to Kaepernick, and you're seeing increasingly fans who are, you know, rooting for bad teams, who are saying, well, why don't we just give him a chance? And it's like, yeah, you're probably the same person who 3 weeks ago was like, I would never want that guy on my team. But you lost a couple of games, and now it's like, oh, let's bring him in.
Jason, you hear this in a number of different sports right now, of people wanting this. Mike Mularkey of the Titans coach comes out and says that he would like to see the officials be held accountable publicly, urging the NFL to do so. Your thoughts on that thought?
What does that mean? Like, what are they supposed to do? Like, name them? Or, you know, like, are they supposed to, like, stand there publicly and have people throw, like, rotten fruit at them? I mean, I don't know. Like,
maybe,
you know,
press conferences after and such?
I'm sorry, what?
Maybe press conferences after the game, things along those lines?
Well, they can be asked questions. You know, that can happen already on controversial calls. Look, everybody missed the call that went wrong in that Tennessee-Pittsburgh game. Like, the TV people didn't even realize it. Nobody, like, they didn't call in the Dean Blandino, Mike Pereiras of the world. So everybody missed that call. I just, when you say held accountable, like, fined, you know, downgraded, you know, pictures in the paper, you know, pictures on the internet, having to answer questions. I want to know what that is. Because, like, I think that most refs, to begin with, it's a fairly miserable life. Like, you know, you go to a game and all you're doing is running the game. Nobody's really cheering for you. So, I mean, you know, they make good money doing it. I mean, that's not, I don't feel sad for them or anything else like that. But it's not like you're really part of the show. So I don't know what Mike Mularkey wants when he says be held accountable. Does that mean you don't work for a week or something like that? I mean, maybe on an egregious call. But in that situation with the Martavis Bryant play, who's ultimately responsible for that one? Is it the head official, or is it the person who was closest to it? Like, I don't quite get that one.
Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report talking NFL with us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 44 minutes past the hour. Sad news with Terry Glenn passing away in an automobile accident yesterday. He was a pretty good receiver.
Yeah, he was a really good player. And, you know, sad life growing up. You know, mother was killed by a violent boyfriend. And, you know, rough childhood, overcame it. you know, sometimes reticent to talk, but really, really skilled guy. Great rookie year under, you know, Bill Parcells. And, you know, made a Super Bowl, you know, helped that team get to a Super Bowl. Sadly didn't achieve everything that his talent should have allowed him to achieve because he just got hurt a lot, wasn't the biggest guy in the world. But held his head up high. I mean, he was a really classy guy. I remember talking to him at the Super Bowl and getting into the story of his mother and everything, and he just handled it with a certain amount of dignity that in class, you know, quietly, that you appreciate with people. So, yeah, that is a tough one.
We'll end it on that. Jason, always appreciate your time. Great insight, and enjoy the rest of your week.
No problem. Take care, guys. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jason.
We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line to take your calls next when we come back to the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, 8 minutes away from opening the Boston Pizza fan line. But first, how'd you sleep last night,
Another
Westy?
Fantastic night of sleep. I want to thank MyPillow so very much. It's for real, boys. They ask you how big you are as far as what size shirt do you wear. They ask you how do you sleep, on your tummy, on your back, on your side. I'm a side sleeper. Give me a large shirt. I joked about the size shirt that I wear. It might be a little tight.
I was going to say, did you say extra small?
Might be a little tight, but give me a large, please. And MyPillow.com sent me a pillow, and it is fantastic, guys. There's no more propping anything up or squeezing anything. Like, I'm super picky on my pillows, and sleep is precious. We all know that. You will not be disappointed, I promise you, in MyPillow. So check it out. Go to MyPillow.com and enter the station promo code TSNRICK. Or if you would like, call 1-800-445-9260 and there also use the promo code TSNRICK. I guarantee you will love MyPillow. It is absolutely fantastic by far, and I've been through a lot, folks. I would never hesitate to spend $150, whatever it takes, to try and find a good pillow. MyPillow, no doubt, the best pillow I've ever used.
Go get one for sure. J.D. Martinez is on the Toronto Blue Jays radar. As the free agent market sets in, he could fetch as much as $200 million on the open market, but the Jays are interested, and he is on the radar.
Sure hope the Jays are relevant next year. It makes summer that much more fun. Huh?
Well, I had a blast this summer watching baseball. I had an outstanding time.
Mr. Astros.
We know you had a good time, Frank. The whole city knows you had a good time, Frank. The
you
tank.
Put the ass in Astros, JT.
What a great ass it is. Boss Pizza fan line is going to be open at 9 o'clock, 780-1290. We'll delve into the Jets' 5-3 loss to the Nashville Predators. Your impressions on the loss and the game.
Every once in a while. The Jets, kind of, we were talking. They've had a good run. You earn a game like this every once in a while, right? Even the best of teams, this happens. You're the third, fourth-ranked team in the NHL. You're going to have a bit of a struggle like this every once in a while. And going forward, though, don't challenge this Nashville Predators power play. That's for darn sure. And that's where things sort of fell apart, right? They pot two power play goals in the second period. A nice first period. Things fall apart in the second. Next thing you know, you're down 5-1 to start the third. And after that, it really doesn't matter. So the boys drop one. Move on, get ready for the California swing here with the Kings tomorrow night.
Yeah, I thought Nashville's speed was apparent, as well as Winnipeg's inability to kind of adjust for it and to make plays. I thought they were hemmed into their own zone the majority of the second period because Nashville gapped up on them and didn't allow them a whole lot of space to get out, and that kind of contributed to them getting hemmed inside their own end for long stretches of time. But you just make it a one-off, I guess, is kind of the main thing, right? And it's not like they played bad for 60 minutes or 40 minutes. It was really a 20-minute stretch of hockey where they lost it for a little bit because the first they were fine, and then the third period is basically a wash at that point.
Which is interesting, the 20-minute where they kind of gave it up because they've grabbed their fair share of games in 20 minutes as well, right?
Yeah. Look, just Saturday, second period. They've usually done their damage in the first, but Yeah, a bit of a one-off in that regard. But all in all, I don't think it was the worst game of the world. Just bad 20 minutes can sink you against good teams.
The Jets' power play was 1-for-2. The Predators were 2-for-3 on the man advantage. Matthew Perreault with his 4th and 5th goals of the season, his 4th goal in 3 games. Myers and Little assisted on the first one. Then Myers had his 3rd of the season. Shifley Connor in on that. And Armia gets a helper on Matthew Perreault's 5th goal of the season. It's 20 games into the year, gentlemen. The Winnipeg Jets have 27 points and are a point up on Nashville for 2nd in the Western, in the Central Division, 12-5-3. Your thoughts on the Winnipeg Jets 20 games into the year? Are they going to get it done? Are they going to the postseason? Are you buying in, or do you need more time?
Well, at this point in time, I think you have to rely on the Thanksgiving 80% rule sort of thing. And if you're going to push your chips one way or the other, go with it. Have some fun with it. The Jets are going to make the playoffs this year. The one thing I wonder, the PDO chart yesterday coming out where the Jets, I believe, had the 2nd highest combined PDO for so shooting percentage and save percentage. That's considered to be a sort of a luck type of a stat, and the Jets are riding high on that right now. How much will that shift down, and what will the effects be? How close to 930 is Connor Hellebuck going to stay? And the overall team shooting percentage as well. So I don't think we've seen the best of the Winnipeg Jets yet. And they're certainly a heck of a lot deeper with Matthew Perreault out there. Right now at the 4th line, you wonder what's going to happen there. But by and large, I'm buying what I'm seeing more or less from the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of improvement that still needed to be made with how this team plays, but at the same time, you've banked these wins already. Like, at least, like, if you're going to play subpar, which I think, you know, their talent level, they can play much more sound as a team, but if you're going to play subpar, you bank, you know, the amount of points that they have. Well, then that just kind of sets you up for what should be another solid 20 games to follow after that. So if they can improve the penalty kill and spend a little less time inside their own end, there's no reason this team can't battle with the St. Louis's and Nashville for one of the top 3 spots in the division.
30 NHL teams play tomorrow night prior to U.S. Thanksgiving on Thursday. The Blues are the only team who will not have a game, and this is just out from Gord Miller. I know people like to look at U.S. Thanksgiving as the indicator of who's going to make the playoffs in the NHL, but last year, 4 playoff teams weren't in the top 8 at that time, and 2 years ago, 3 playoff teams didn't have a spot at U.S. Thanksgiving. I think this is going to be a different year for that U.S. Thanksgiving, Mark. I think the Central Division itself, with the parity, could see a lot of changes as the season goes forward. What are your thoughts 20 games in on the Jets? What do you think of the loss last night? And, of course, the 105th Grey Cup this Sunday on TSN 1290. The Stamps are a 7-point favorite. Who do you have going into the 105th Grey Cup Classic? Anything and everything next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio, 780-1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, and an hour of your phone calls on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. You can also text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki, and your calls. Rick, you're kicking us off this morning on the Big Show. Go ahead, Rick.
Good morning, boys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Feels like winter now.
Oh, does it ever.
I was scraping the window this morning. I said, why am I doing this? But, I mean, the answer's pretty obvious.
Because right? You have to.
That's it. Anyways, you know, I don't think the Jets are that far off the mark. I mean, first of all, I think they're going to make the playoffs this year. And then last night, you know, I didn't think they were that bad. The second period really got away on them. But with a bounce here or there, and they could have walked out of there with a point, honestly, like, it was 5-1, but I thought that was a little, you know, flattering to Nashville. 19-7, okay, fine, but it's the specialty teams. You know, for me, the frustrating thing is the way the NHL calls games. The refereeing is too subjective. Yeah, you know, you slash a guy on the stick, or you get your stick anywhere near his hands, ticky tacky, and they call it. But, you know, if they were really calling it by the book that way, I think there'd be a stoppage in play like every 30 seconds.
I just find it inconsistent.
That's exactly
I know what you're talking about, because Blake Wheeler gets his stick slashed out of his hands. It doesn't break. There's no call. Dustin Byfuglien breaks a guy's stick. It's a call. They're both slashes. If you're going to call it, call them both. I know what you're getting at. I just, it's not, to me, there's that fever out there that thinks the Jets are always getting screwed over. I don't believe that. I don't believe that either. Yeah, I just feel overall it's so inconsistent
it's
that it could be better.
I mean, it's like a lot of the pro sports leagues generate their officiating now to generate offense. And I guess that's what it's all about. But, hey, you know what? On an upside, we're getting good Buff right now. When he crushed Forsberg yesterday, it's like a man among boys. When he plays with a bit of an edge, he just pushes a guy. It's like pushing a 12-year-old child.
Yeah.
He's playing pretty good. And Hellebuck, I think that his save percentage is more sustainable than the Jets' shooting percentage. So we're getting good goaltending, and it's going to take us a long way. Playoff spot, I think, for sure. Whether they challenge for the top, well, we'll see yet, but you know, 4 points out of this road trip isn't so bad, and that's I think they'll beat the Kings because the Kings are not that good. The Kings cost me a big time last week in the pools. All I needed them to do was beat Vancouver, and they, you know what they did to the Bed.
Oh
my God!
Rick, I love that sentiment. It's always like the Kings aren't that good. They should beat the Kings. The Kings cost me everything starts and ends with that.
All based on exactly. Have a great day, boys.
Yeah, you too. I feel the same way about the New York Giants. The New York Giants this week really cost me. I detest the New York Giants.
That was the shocker of the weekend. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Rick, thanks for the call on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Mitchell, you're on the program. Go ahead, Mitchell.
You know who would have made that kick last night instead of Blair Walsh?
Who that?
Jim Toth.
Steven Gostkowski.
Who?
Gostkowski would have made that bomb last night.
Oh,
he would have made it left-footed.
Also, what's your guys' favorite Grey Cup food?
Oh.
Food.
I think you're onto something here today. What's your favorite Grey Cup food?
We're talking food. We're all in. Yeah.
Well, I'll start with all of it, but no onions. I don't like onions. My favorite Grey Cup food comes in a 591 milliliter can of... Is that a king can or is that?
No, I was thinking it comes in a bottle of OV.
OV? Is this Kevin Olszewski? It's a little early, Olszewski. That's a good topic. What is your go-to Grey Cup food, Mitchell, besides the OV?
Man, I have to say chicken wings. A little bit of salt and pepper, maybe a little bit of spicy chicken wings in there.
Here, here. I'm down for salt and pepper chicken wings, man. Absolutely.
Agree.
Yeah.
Who do you have in the Grey Cup?
Calgary, I guess. I don't really like Toronto that much.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Mitchell. We appreciate it. What's your favorite Grey Cup?
I'm with you. Like, it depends, man. If I'm sliding, if I'm having a bit of a cheat day, then I'll dive into things that I normally never touch along the lines of potato chips and onion dip, where that's like a two or three times thing a year, that Super Bowl. But if I'm going to keep it more meat-based, then some good coarse Cuba sauce, chicken wings, all that sort of, maybe some, if I'm lucky, get some deer sausage, things along those lines. So, yeah, anything, everything, and a lot of it.
Yeah, Brandon, you're like me. We've had a cheat life, not a cheat day.
Yeah, it does not just limit itself to days. But I'm a dip guy. I love dips. So if you put together like three or four solid dips, I'll run a trade on that, and wings too. I've always been a wing, but like whenever I go to, like if I go into a restaurant and you have an appy platter, yeah, on board. And it's a one person, like it usually says like serves two or three, but it's like, yeah, I'll get the appy platter. What is everybody else getting?
Interesting. Thanks, Mitchell. Maybe we'll go down this road. What's your favorite Grey Cup food as we head into the 105th Grey Cup between the Calgary Stampeders and the Toronto Argos? Also taking your calls on the Jets and 20 games in. Are you buying in? Are you all in, or do you need to see some more? 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Ray, you're on the program. Go ahead, Ray.
Hey, fellas. I got two quick questions. Not really Jets related, but hockey related. What do you think is the Predators, like their best trade they made in the last couple of years? So between acquiring Subban, Turris, I guess that one's too early, or Johansson, so not counting the Forsberg one. And then my second question, how many points do you guys think Stamkos and Kucherov finish with? And that's all I had, guys.
Thanks for the call, Ray. As a guy who has Kucherov in his fantasy hockey pool, I think he'll get 278 points this year. That's a great question, actually, with how those two are rolling down in Tampa Bay. But we'll start with, what was the best trade the Predators pulled off? And is there a bad one?
I got to go to Ryan Johansson, I think. They're a team desperate for strong help down the middle.
Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson.
An abundance of, like, you look at who they've traded defensively as of late and who they still have, that it just doesn't even make sense, right? But I'm going to say organizationally, I'm going to go with that trade for Ryan Johansson.
Oh boy. I'll say the Subban-Weber trade mainly because I don't think there's another GM on the planet in David Poyle's shoes who would have had the cojones and the confidence to pull something.
Mostly cojones.
Yeah, 99% cojones. Because there's no need for him to make that trade, right? Like, you could be, and Shea Weber was such a big part of the community there too, and like essentially the best player in Nashville history, and he makes the move to get rid of the contract and arguably get a better player or at least equal value. Like, to just even the thought of him doing that trade, I love that idea. I would go with the Subban one.
I'm leaning towards the Subban one as well because you have your captain, you have him locked up. He there's a difference between being the captain of a team and being the captain of the team that you sort of have been the franchise guy since it's been there and built. That's a tough deal to make, but I think it's probably the biggest one. I think Subban's going to have a massive impact around that organization on the ice for years to come. But the Johansson one is to get a number one center. And the reason I just think that's an easier trade than the Weber for Subban trade is because you're dealing from your strength. Like, you could deal a D-man. It's not like you are dealing – you have two really solid D-men and you're going to give one up to get a center. That was your strength. Dynamic trade nonetheless, and I think it was a really good one for the Predators, but I'll lean towards getting Subban for Shea Weber as the big one. That's an interesting question. Thanks for the call, Ray. Casey at the Bat has tweeted me, longtime listener, and he said the Giants cost him an NFL Pro Line pools ticket worth $37,000. So he picked every game right.
Except that one.
Except for the one that had a 9.5 spread.
Come on.
That's what he's saying.
He also asked about Kucherov and Stamkos and
yes.
How many points ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, they're basically, those two guys more or less are on track for 135 to 140 points.
Let it be.
They are on pace for about 140 each is what the pace is that they're on right now. And Stamkos' shooting percentage is only 16. That's actually below his career average. Kucherov's is a lot higher at 21, but... I think they'll both crack 100. A little bit over 100.
I'll say they both get 120.
Really?
Yeah.
120 points yeah. from two guys on the same
Who's
team.
Who's going to slow them down? They're just running roughshod. Knock on wood, injury free, 120. Both of them.
I'm going to say they both hit a hundy. Stamkos has 35 points. Kucherov has 33. Kucherov has 17 goals.
You know what you don't have, JT? Cojones. A hundy. They both break a hundy. Let them drop.
Who was the last player to break a hundy?
McDavid did it last year.
So
he got 100. I think right on the money. And Kane was the year prior to that as well.
So they're 20. Let me see. Dare you call out what I'm carrying, by the way. 20 games in, they have 35 and 33 points.
And Kucherov going back
for 140, boys. You think they're going to stall to the degree of just creeping over 100?
Yeah, I do actually.
Really?
I do. I think that teams will adjust.
Putting 10 guys on the ice?
But it's not even adjusting though, right? Like, there's 62 games left, so even if they say get 70 points over the next 60 games, that's over a point a game,
yeah.
And they're at 105. You know what I mean? Like, that's
yeah.
That I think is a reasonable.
I'll say
rate.
They break a hundy. There you are. Drink it in. Take a good look. I laid them down. They get a hundy. They don't get 120. Neither one of them gets 120.
Kucherov, going back to the middle of last season, is almost at a goal a game. Like, he's just under a goal a game. It's pretty crazy that the second leading scorer of the NHL is maybe the most underrated player still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, and what is he making, 4-2, 4-3?
How about that contract?
Enjoy the next one, though, Stevie.
Yeah.
I'd be looking hard at Tampa Bay with what I have and saying I could get some very good players here, just cap-wise.
What do they do with Kucherov?
Their depth is unbelievable as well. One of the deepest teams. Boss Pizza Fan Line's open, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, Ken, another longtime listener, says he's going to bring a little Manitoba here in Calgary for Grey Cup food. He'll make pierogies and farmer sausage.
Down with that.
Yeah, I'm all down with that as well. Yeah. Good stuff. We'll get to more of your calls and more tweets here coming in about that on The Big Show. TSN 1290 next, 780-1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, wide open, or you can text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying on The Big Show with Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. At Jets979 makes a great point about the best Predators trade. Don't forget about Martin Erat for Philip Forsberg. Erat's not even in the league anymore.
I think Ray said not to include that one.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to pay attention. Sorry, Ray.
Sorry. That might be the all time one of that. That's one of the, that's in the pantheon of all time.
It's for a playoff run.
Four awful trades.
We're gonna load up for a playoff run. The Capitals said we're gonna get Martin Erat, push us over the top. Saints Vines also makes a point about Casey at the Bats pro line ticket. Yes, if the Chiefs would have won against the Giants, that would have diluted the whole pools thing for $37K. But that's what it was sort of on the line. That the point, I think, to that is just that the one sure game of the week is the one that cost you.
There's been a strange number of NFL games where double-digit or damn near double-digit spreads where the underdogs are winning upright. Or straight up,
yeah. 12-9 that game ended, and the Chiefs were 9.5-point favorites.
And you know, I don't even think we mentioned this, but it was because you had Pete Carroll and Jason Moss with these terrible coaching decisions. But did you see what Kansas City did late in the game at about the 40 or 50? Tight end reverse, and Travis Kelce throws a pass 50 yards downfield that gets picked off. Like, is there more, I would have tried outsmart this other coach because I'm Andy Reid moment than having your tight end throw a pass down the field 50 yards?
Desperate times call for desperate measures, brother.
Yes, indeed. 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Who's next?
Howard.
Howard, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. My favorite Grey Cup food has got to be Guinness and ibuprofen.
At the same time, or?
Well, you know what? This will be my 18th I'm going to now, and it's I've never seen the Bombers win one yet. So
fair.
Ibuprofen starts the day, and then Guinness right from there.
You know, it was funny because at the end of the golf season, I got to go out for a round, and Kevin Nealis, he's on the Bomber board, but he's a former Bomber, of course, and was on the 88 Grey Cup team, I believe.
Yeah, you just dropped a name out of your pocket there. It's behind you.
Yeah, we'll get it later. He's a tiny guy, so it won't take much to pick it up. I won't need any help. But he had his Grey Cup ring on, and I'm like, let's see that. And he goes, man, it's been so long that these things look like a penny now compared to their Grey Cup rings. And it was. It was tiny. And I remember seeing Colin Patterson's 89 Flames Grey Cup ring, and they just look like normal high school prom rings compared to what they are now. It's been that long for the Bombers. But so you're 18th in a row you're going to?
Not 18th in a row, but I mean 18. And
oh, okay.
I've seen the Bombers lose three times in Calgary, three times in BC, twice in Toronto, Montreal. So I'm getting tired of it, but still got the faith.
Yeah. Who do you have this weekend?
I really don't give a rat's butt either, but I'll wear a red hat, I guess, because we're the West.
That's how it often comes down to two people who are like, I really don't like Toronto, and I can't stand the Stamps, so I'll just go with the team from the West because we're in the West.
The good thing is Touchdown Manitoba is completely sold out. So there's a lot of people from Winnipeg going down there as well. It'll be a blast.
Yes, and you might run into a guy named Hustler and Rick Ralph and Darren Bombing.
I've seen those guys down in Dallas at the Super Bowl. So,
oh, there you go. I said to Hustler once, I go, how come you're not the mayor of anything? He goes, I keep denying the nominations. I would like
have
be
a good one, guys.
Yeah, you too. Take Thanks care, for man. The call, Howard. We're also getting your calls on your favorite Grey Cup food, as it is Grey Cup weekend. And, of course, you can hear the 105th Grey Cup right here on TSN 1290. Casey in the Bat says, if I could qualify it, I'd pick the Giants. I would have won around. Oh, that's what he's saying, that if he had picked the Giants, he would have won $30K. Well, yeah, that's the biggest upset of the week. Ryan Smith on Twitter, Chiefs are not making many friends. One hit 10 out of 11 and made $150. All 11 would have paid $4K. Only miss was the Chiefs at 9.5.
Huh.
It's been a great season that way, though, and I know that I'm one of the guys that get burnt on the picks and stuff on Sports Select and everything else as well, but that's what makes it such a great season. There is more parity than ever in the National Football League, I think.
I don't know, man. There's always a pile of parity there, but maybe because of some of the size of the spreads that we're witnessing here and seeing the outright wins, maybe you're right. I wonder what the breakdown would be.
Who's your great or your Super Bowl team right now? For me, it's the Eagles. Like, it's not the Patriots, and it's not the Steelers, although those two teams could very easily win it. But so could the Eagles.
Yeah, I got a big-time man crush on Carson Wentz. I would love, and for Philadelphia to win the Super Bowl, like that storyline, I can push all in on that, man. I hope that comes to fruition.
You would think, too, the Eagles have won one before, right? Like, people kind of...
You would think, you mean? Yeah, they haven't.
Yeah, yeah, no, and they're not really... close side. Like, yeah. The McNabb one, and then one in the 70s with Jaws when Ron Jaworski was the quarterback against the Raiders. You know what's I'm not going to pick them to make the Super Bowl, but if I had to pick a dark horse Super Bowl team, it would actually be the Jaguars.
I thought you were going to say Mini.
I don't know if Mini's a dark
Mini's
horse.
Mini's another one.
I don't know Mini's... if Mini's a dark horse. Like, I think I think they're just a Super Bowl contending team.
Jacksonville sitting on top of the AFC South.
And what people don't realize about how good Jacksonville's defense is that so far this season, and it got even better after the Browns game, but they've given up less yards and less points per game than the Broncos Super Bowl winning defense a few years ago.
Well, there's been teams with defenses like that that have a quarterback like Bortles who
just don't turn it over.
Just don't turn it over, run the ball, and throw one or two TDs a game.
But the thing with that team specifically is that they give up a lot on the ground, right?
Basically,
they
all
give
of their
up 113
yardage.
Yards on the ground. Yeah, so you wonder come playoff time, that's probably going to. I think they're 16th against the run, something like that.
That's why. That's why I think somebody like the Steelers could get through them with Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Although Jacksonville went into Pittsburgh and handed it to him when Ben Roethlisberger questioned even
playoff
being
time?
Alive anymore, let alone...
How funny would that? Could Blake you imagine Bortles? 2 months from now, Blake... And let's welcome Blake Bortles to the stage as Super Bowl MVP. Oh, my.
Well, and along those lines of, like we said, where could Drew Brees go? And we got to take a break here. We'll get more of your calls, 780-1290, when we come back. But where could Drew Brees go? And we said, well, why wouldn't you sign in Jacksonville? Well, what does New Orleans do with him now if they go to the playoffs and push in? He's an unrestricted free agent. More of your calls next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki in the Boss Pizza Fan Line. If you want to weigh in on the conversations, by all means, please do so. Wide open, 780-1290. Also text 1290-90 with standard message rates apply. And we're talking about the Jets 5-3 loss last night in Nashville. What do you take from the game? What did you see? What did you like? What didn't you like? And, of course, the rest of the three-game road trip. It's also 20 games into the season now for the Winnipeg Jets. They're second in the Central with a one-point lead on the Nashville Predators. They are 12-5-3 with 27 points in 20 games. Are you buying in? Are you in? Is this a playoff team with the American Thanksgiving 2 days away? 30 teams in action tomorrow night. The only ones not playing prior to the Thanksgiving break on or Thanksgiving Day on Thursday
in the U.S. is the St. Louis Blues, who are first in the Central with 31 points in 21 games. Are you in on the Jets? And, of course, the Grey Cup. Who do you like, Toronto or Calgary? Calgary opens up as 7-point favorites. We're also taking your thoughts on your favorite Grey Cup food, as it is the 105th Classic this weekend. Mitch, who just called us, just sent us a tweet and said, my dad texted me and said, really, Mitch, you told them you drink OV? You're an odd man. Your father is even embarrassed.
What's wrong? For you, Mitch. The whole beer thing is a little bit lost on me. So what's the... So what about OV?
OV.
It's an old classic, isn't it?
It's this is going to light up the full...
That's a little old school.
We should get Kevin Orshevsky in here because...
What's wrong with that? What's wrong
I've seen him sit at the Wood at Nick's and have an OV and look all 98 years old. It's an old, old, old choice that's kind of gone
it's
out.
It's not high-end, I guess, would be...
Yeah.
Be the correct term in the beer world. I should say, too, actually, full disclosure... my NHL 18 online team name with some of my buddies, we are the OV Knights. Because some of the boys are
dedicated
to the OV brand.
I'm from Lethbridge. They had a brewery there. It's closed now, but that's where they made Pilsner.
And
And I remember when I left Lethbridge and would go to a liquor store.
And the Blood of Saskatchewan, isn't it?
Yeah, my dad. This happened when we talked Hams beer too. By the way, the phone lines lit up. But my dad used to drink the Pilsner, the wee stubby chubbies in those bottles.
Huh.
And then when I moved, I believe there was a guy wherever I was living and went to buy. I think my dad was coming to town, so I was buying some Pilsner. I didn't drink it actually after I could afford my own. And not have to rob my dad's fridge. But somebody said to me, do you need a couple bucks? We can do a little better than this Pilsner, eh, son? I go, it's
for Pilsner or Saskatchewan? You can't buy it in Manitoba, can you? I don't even know.
I think you can now. Yep. You can get any beer anywhere.
It's a major brew in Saskatchewan, right?
You know, somebody's tweeting us, a shame that we're not going to the Grey Cup and all this and all that. We should go on a beer tour. The Big Show beer tour. And Westy, you can drive.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to partake.
I'll somehow work in chocolate milk into it. Okay, we'll get chocolate milk to sponsor it as well.
I'm so down.
We'll
just drive you guys.
Yeah.
We haven't got on the road yet, but they'll send us for a beer tour.
As soon as the mustache rides are done for Movember with taking listeners to the Jets game, and we'll be auctioning off another one tomorrow, we'll get in the old vehicle and go on a beer.
All right.
I wonder if we
can
do it live.
Some finer establishments across the land?
Yes. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line on TSN 1290, 780-1290. Go ahead. Who is next?
It's Ryan.
Ryan, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Grey Cup food. You got to have both types of chicken wings, hot and mild. You got to have some riblets, and I'm with Troy. You got to have the coarse coupe. Troy, where do you get yours from?
I go to Main Street Tenderloin.
Very good. Very good. Also, you could try Metro on Higgins, I think. Whichever. It's very
good. Euclid, maybe, yeah.
I want to get your guys' take on something. Give me a strongly agree, or strongly disagree. Without either Hellebuyck or Mason absolutely standing on their heads and giving unreal goaltending, the Jets don't win. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan. We appreciate the call. You said strongly agree or disagree.
Well, most teams would probably be in that, where you don't often win unless you get some... But you're saying,
but he's saying how they're standing on their head, like outstanding goaltending.
Yeah, I think that's an unfair assessment. I don't agree with that.
I will give it a slight disagree.
I'll give it a disagree. Are they still in the playoffs without the great goaltending?
No, not right now.
So they're 12-5-3.
Oh, but what are they getting in exchange for great goaltending?
With average goaltending.
What are you going to get them, a 9-15?
Say 9-18, because they're getting 9-30.
9-18, they're in.
I would say as of this moment, they would be out. As in, I think they can still play above the level they have so far. But to say that they can't win unless they get 9-30 goaltending, I think that's a little bit unfair.
Chicago's in at 10-8-2 with 22 points. And San Jose's the next team, 21-10-8-1. I think they're right around there with average goaltending. You got to keep in mind, they pump some teams. Like 7-1, 5-2. I mean, they're scoring.
A lot of games that weren't games going into the final period. kind of thing.
Yeah, so I think they're around where Chicago, San Jose is at 10-8. They're 10-7 and maybe one or two.
I think Connor Hellebuck would have allowed six more goals if he allowed six more goals, he'd have a 9-13 save percentage. So now, how many more games do they lose if you average, allowing five or six more goals?
And I'll
probably
put it
be to, 4 points less. Yeah, I agree.
I'll put it this way: they're not second in the Central with 27 points without really good goaltending.
Yeah, of course not. No,
they're around the playoff cutoff line is where I think they are with average goaltending. Thanks for the call, Ryan. 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza fan line. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, of course, the Grey Cup food. He said mild hot wings, and of course, a little Kubasa. You're a home chef.
Yeah, aspiring.
You know what a home chef is?
Yeah.
Somebody who, yeah, okay.
Who chefs at home?
Yes. And watches the shows and learns.
Yeah.
Not like, a home chef is somebody who actually watches shows and reads and learns, not just reads the side of the box.
Are you an actual, would you consider yourself pretty fancy in the kitchen?
Yeah. I cook. I cook supper every day. I don't buy out anything. Me and the fiance will usually cook something.
Fiance and I?
Maybe lunch. I'd say I cook about
that doesn't mean 10, you're any
12,
good,
13 meals a week.
But you're good.
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
So you guys don't eat, order in ever?
Not ever. There's sometimes you got to order
after
in.
After a couple of OVs, yeah. Then you're like ordering in the next day.
Yeah, yeah. I'll send out the pic of what I do for Grey Cup. There'll be a couple.
I'd rather taste test.
I'll bring a treat in for the boys.
Maybe we the Big Show
Friday.
Beer trip
this
stops by the old
stops by the Maison. Philly mansion
and has a little something waiting on the grill for us.
Your French is quite selective. It's quite entertaining.
It was kindergarten to grade six, so it's whatever's hanging on from 58 years ago.
You only took French from K to six?
Yeah. But it was immersion. It was full French. It was.
Oh, really?
It wasn't just a class, yeah.
Oh, look at you.
Qu'est-ce qui se passe ici? Savez-vous nager? Oui, à la piscine. Boss Pete's fan line, 780-1290 if you want to save us from the direction we're going right now. Getting your Grey Cup favorite foods and, of course, your thoughts on the Jets. Are you all in? And your impressions of the 5-3 loss last night. And we went around at the start of the show and a little bit throughout it today here on the Big Show on TSN 1290, just with the loss and what you take from it. You don't weigh into much of the third period, given the fact that it was 4-1. I like the first and the third period for the Jets. The game obviously got away from them with the penalties in the second, but it's interesting what you take from that game, because how these two teams match up. There's four more games between the Jets and the Predators, and what I take from this game, despite the fact they were down 4-1 and they lost 5-3, if I had to pick an edge on who's the better team, I go with Nashville, but I think they're close. I think this is a pretty good matchup between these two teams.
You're talking with the Preds?
Predators, yes.
I think the Jets, you look at what Nashville accomplished last year in the playoffs, right? And largely the same group here, maybe even improved upon. I think come playoff time that the boys, we talked yesterday about, does anybody scare you in the West? And Wick said, hey, I'm going to put Nashville in a group. And I think last night maybe was a bit of a snapshot that the boys still have a step to take. Like trying to imagine, and it's just awesome how everything gets cranked up come playoff time. But the Preds, what we witnessed last year in the playoffs, the Jets haven't taken. We haven't witnessed that. We know Nashville is very capable of cranking things up to a playoff level. We haven't seen these guys. I think there's lessons to be learned still for the Jets. Maybe one run here where they don't go as deep or don't accomplish as much, where it's pretty easy to imagine the Nashville Predators quite possibly winning the Cup, right? So I think the Jets are a step for sure, at the least behind a team like the Preds come when the chips are down playoff time.
I'm not a big if guy, but if Kyle Connor buries that backhand and
if Scheifele doesn't give it away and if Tyler Meyer stops the bounce
and
if
Jacob Trouba doesn't turn it over,
Trouba, Connor,
and Scheifele
Trouba
doesn't hit that post,
yeah.
they win 7-5.
Yeah, sure. Not a big if guy.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
We'll get Paul to hang on, but let's go to Jonathan.
Jonathan, welcome to the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just want to get your feeling and what's your feelings on the Brian Little extension now with a no trade for a couple of years.
I still like it. Like, I mean, players are going to have ups and downs. I don't think Brian Little's performing as good as he can, but I also don't think he's playing poorly, if that makes sense. I just think he's doing all right, and he can be better.
Do you see a diminishing asset right now? I do.
I don't know. I mean, you think in 20 games he's diminished?
Not the same player.
You don't think he can play better?
But I'll agree, like the 6 years left on his contract or the 5 years left on his contract, one, two, three, he's got 6 years after this year. I think you make a very valid point where there is plenty to be concerned about looking forward for a guy who turns 31 in November, like or who just turned 30 years old in November 12th, right? He just turned 30. So you're talking like the next 6 years.
The thing about the contract, when you say, what do you think about the contract given the way he's played? I mean, he's a positive player, and he's got 9 points in 20 games. I mean, here's the flip side of that. So if you think he's diminishing now, would you not have signed him to that in the offseason?
He has 9 points in 20 games playing with two world-class players, and which is concerning. So now you're paying a guy major bucks with long-term, maybe on your third-line center, which he probably should be at right now.
I think the two players he's playing with have world-class skill. I don't think they're world-class players yet. I think they turn the puck over like there's no tomorrow. I think Patrick Laine's 6 turnovers in that game against Philadelphia, including the one in overtime, and then he took a penalty, is an issue. And I think Brian Little augments how that defensive side of the game with those two. They have world-class skill. You think they're world-class all-around players right now?
Yeah, I don't know how you define that, but I don't know how you don't think Ehlers and Laine are world-class players, man.
I think they have world-class skill. I don't think they're Steven Stamkos or...
We're talking about a guy in Brian Little, 0.78, 0.74, 0.74, 0.80 over the last 4 years, right now at 0.45. Just turned 30 years old, and the Jets have him under contract for 6 more years. If he's not diminishing right now, the diminish is on its way. It's just you hope it's minimized to whatever the diminishing returns are, right?
You know what I'm asking you, Jonathan, is so 20 games into it, you know, we're making an evaluation, but 20 games prior, do you not give him that contract?
Sorry, Jonathan. Oh. Jonathan left.
I think it's important to. I like what Wicks asked. Has there been a game so far this year where he's sort of popped off the ice at you?
And not even points.
I think the fair answer is no.
Yeah, but given his career, don't you think he's going to perform better?
I hope so.
Maybe not in 5 years.
And a lot of it could have to do with just the simple chemistry of that's just not a good fit. And so maybe at some point in time, and we know Scheifele, Ehlers, Laine is going to be a decent fit. We know Wheeler can roll pretty well with Little. We've watched that before. So I wonder at some point in time, and we've been talking about it for a long time, that seems like the easiest switch to make. Just switch up centers there.
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned about Brian Little right now. You guys?
I think we're knocking on the door of concern. Let me rephrase that. I don't have concern about Brian Little. I think you have to do something now or in the impending future, like very quickly, about that second line, and which is the center switch up with the top line.
I had concerns about the contract in the last couple of years of it. I wouldn't have expected to be concerned about his play right now, but even 20 games in, it's still fairly early, but I would just like not shooting the puck a whole lot, not creating a whole lot. Like at the very least, just you'd like to see more chances.
Let me reverse this question. If Laine and Ehlers are world-class all-around players right now, why aren't they making him better? To me, that's what world-class players do.
But the thing is, and I think chemistry is a real important piece of the puzzle here, and sometimes you just don't. You can't generate the chemistry necessary. And I'm going to push that envelope much more so than I'm going to call out Ehlers or Laine in not being world class or in Brian Little falling off here. Like I think all the players involved deserve a line change and a little bit of a mix up before we cement where they're at or what they are or what they aren't at this point.
I just see Ehlers and Line A, as good as they are, they turn the puck over a lot compared to Brian Little.
Well, they turn it over, well, because they have it a lot more, and they're considerably more creative, both of them, in the offensive zone than Brian Little. Right? If you're talking offensive zone turnovers, you're going to get that. Yeah, that's part of being brilliant.
But that's part of what makes Brian Little good, is his overall 200-foot
well,
game.
Well, sure,
and
but
defensive.
He also doesn't have anywhere near the brilliance of either Line A no. or Ehlers.
We got a break. We'll continue the conversation and get to Paul on the Boston Pizza fan line when we come back. 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca and the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 or text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Jim Toth, Troy Wessler, Brandon Ruwicki, and Paul, you're on the program. Go ahead, Paul.
All right. Thanks, boys. Hey, you know, I called in a few minutes ago just to chat about your Grey Cup dinner.
Yeah.
Who are we kidding here? We all know you guys are going to be having a sleepover, so you guys are going to eat leftovers at 6 a.m. Let's get serious. but in all seriousness, I have a question for you guys. So with the East semifinal there, or the West actually, with Jason Moss, I saw today that someone tweeted that he didn't regret that decision to kick that field goal. And I'm not sure if you guys talked about it yesterday, but
sorry to cut you off, Paul, but he actually reiterated, "I will never regret that call."
Why? Like, what was he thinking with 2 minutes left? They gambled on third down twice. What was he thinking?
I don't know. Like he said, I buy into, because I like when coaches think out of the box and going to try and win the game. But to me, if you're going to risk winning or losing the game and going for it, I love that attitude. But you score the touchdown, then you go for the 2 points to win the game, not just tie it. So right. I don't know.
But the weird thing was they were down 7 points, and they're close to the red zone, I think, and it was 3rd and 4. Doing three, getting a three-pointer only keeps you within 4 points. Like, do you think that he actually thought they were down 6 and another field goal would tie it? Or what
he knew because during that drive, he went to his special teams coach, and you saw him hold up his index and pinky finger and said, "We're going for 2." So he was acutely aware of what the points differential was.
Which I like. Like, I why tie it and go to overtime? Like, I don't mind that concept of, even if we go, there's a chance we don't get it and lose the game as opposed to tie it and force overtime. But I like that I'm going for it. I'm going to win. But if you're having that attitude, it also makes it even more, why are you going for the field goal here then?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. It was one of those things where I actually thought that I took them to win the Grey Cup earlier on, right after they stopped that 7-game skid. So I was a little bit crushed, but I did have them to cover, so that last-minute field goal helped me out a lot. But anyways, thanks, boys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Paul. And I like Brandon's train of thought, too. It's not like you're there and you have Brandon Bridge or Kevin Glenn, or, like, no disrespect to them, but you literally have Mike Riley.
And you're inviting Bo Levi Mitchell and Jerome Messam, who just ran for 180-plus yards, and Bo Levi Mitchell specifically. You're bringing them back out on the field to not give you the ball back. So, yeah, the whole double, every single angle and aspect of it all leads to disastrous decision.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Paul, and thanks for all the calls and the thoughts on the Grey Cup food and all that. We'll continue that this week, continue to get your picks for the Grey Cup and delve into that. And, of course, it's a game day tomorrow, Road Sport, Auto Credit, Winnipeg Jets hockey on the station, with the Jets taking on the Kings after an off day today in Los Angeles. Kevin Hrushevsky is a Don Vito Roundtable next, then the Gondola Pizza warm-up and the afternoon ride from 3 till 6. Hustler and Rick Ralph are on their way to Ottawa, so they'll be live from Radio Road tomorrow afternoon along with Darren Bombing. Tonight, Darren Bombing has CFL 60 at 6 o'clock on TSN 1290, and then Mr. Lube Manitoba Moose Game Day as the Moose hit the ice against Laval. That's at 7 o'clock here on TSN 1290. We'll be back tomorrow morning. On behalf of Troy Wessler, Brandon Ruwicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. The Big Show is back at 6 a.m. tomorrow on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.